Previously on Jay and Mitchell's The OC Podcast.
Big ass yacht party.
It's a big ass yacht party. Not a big ass yacht, though. It doesn't seem like the giant boat that I was expecting. And then Sandy just like really aggressively slides like a notebook with a number on it over to Caleb.
And we see the notepad, and it's just Bart Simpson flicking him off. I thought the whole fucking hospital is for the children. It's called the Children's Hospital.
It's time for Jay and Mitchell's The OC Podcast. Okay.
Hello to you and welcome to Jay and Mitchell's The OC Podcast, the podcast where two best buddies get together almost every week via Zoom and record a podcast where we talk about episodes from the TV show Dexter, starring everyone's favorite murderous
serial killer.
He was a vigilante. He only killed bad guys.
Still kill people. Without a trial.
No, I'm just kidding, you fools. We talk about the OC. It's in the title. I am Jay of the Jay and Mitchell's The OC Podcast. I'm joined, as always, by my friend Mitchell.
What's up?
And Mitchell, life, how is yours?
It's going all right. I have to admit that I'm 100% responsible for the delay in the release of this episode. I work a lot, and I happen to work an extra lot over the past few weeks, and it's kept me from doing the fun extracurriculars such as this podcast. But luckily I had a chill week this week and a little time to dive deep into episode 11, The Homecoming.
The Homecoming. Well, we kind of talked about how the seasons of the show, they would take a few weeks off in between episodes every once in a while. And yeah. So that's kind of what we did too, in homage to the OC.
It was our mid-season break.
Yeah. We come back. We're both very well rested. We're both very tan.
Yeah. We're getting ready for the Chrismica episode.
Oh, man. I kind of like the title, The Homecoming. I just assumed it was going to be about homecoming, like a school dance.
Like for school, yeah.
And then you very quickly, like in the first scene, you realize, oh, it's a Thanksgiving episode. And I think they do a Thanksgiving episode like every season.
Yeah, it's very timely. And I guess they, you know, obviously they're shooting these at well ahead of time, but they must have a release schedule. So they're like, okay, first episode's going to drop in, you know, September or whatever, because it's the fall TV season, makes sense. And then, you know, episode 11 is going to be your Thanksgiving. And then episode probably like 13, 14 is going to be your Christmas episode. And
or
then New Year's
in the OC's case, Chrismica.
Chrismica, which can't wait to open that can of worms.
It's I'm sure shows do this still, but none of the ones that I watch. But I do kind of like the like holiday specials. Like if you're watching, you know, Better Call Saul, you're not like, oh, it's the Thanksgiving episode. They do one every season. It's great. Like, yeah. But it is, there's something very nice about kind of their lives are kind of going, you know, on the same calendar that real life is going.
Yeah. And it's always like, I mean, I always kind of like felt ambivalent about it because it's like, they're like addressing the holiday like right up front. They're like, this is the Valentine's Day episode, whatever. And then you're always kind of like, oh, okay, so it's going to be like a cheesy love episode. But they always like find a way to, I guess, incorporate the themes of the holiday, which Thanksgiving is about like togetherness, family, the genocide of the American Indian, as Sandy Cohen puts it in this episode. Yes. And they find a way to like incorporate that into the overall themes of the show and the characters of the show. And yeah, it's kind of cool. Like I always like kind of like roll my eyes a little bit when like a Christmas episode starts, but by the end of it, I'm like crying. So like, you know, like it always inevitably wins me over, but for whatever reason, I'm just like,
you're notoriously grinchy. And
I'm
so
a little
like,
grinchy. Yeah.
Your heart grows as the episode goes on. And
that's true.
By the end of it, got big old Grinch heart.
Got a big old Grinch heart that busts the heart like meter thing. Busts it wide open. That's how big my fucking heart is.
You should get that checked out. I feel like that's your heart changing its size so rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not good for like
blood
circulation.
That's what killed Andre the Giant. Yeah. Gotta be careful.
Oh, I put in my notes. Did you, this is OC adjacent. Did you watch Palm Springs yet?
Not yet. Why is it OC adjacent? That's the new Andy Samberg movie?
It's the new Andy Samberg movie, but fucking Peter Gallagher is like, he's in it. He's not like, I guess he's not like top build main character, but he's a pretty big role in the movie and he's fucking great. He's
of course he is.
Like the father of the bride at this wedding. I don't want to say too much because you should watch it. I really liked it.
Good.
And it's different from like Pop Star or Hot Rod. Like,
is it still like
a little more to it? And,
Yorma and Akiva is like Lonely Island production.
So I thought that one of them directed it, but that is not the case. But I think they produced it. So they had, okay. they definitely had their hand in it a lot. And it's really good. I liked it.
Cool. I'll check it out. Thanks for the rec.
And that's been Jay's rec.
All right. How have you been? I didn't reciprocate that at the beginning of the episode.
Right? I've been good. I've been at the same kind of place I've been for the last what feels like 9 months now.
Yeah, there's this stagnation that like sets in where every day kind of feels the same. I feel you.
Yeah. But no, I'm doing good. I'm glad we're doing this show. So it kind of gives me something to do for a few hours. I've been watching baseball and playing The Last of Us Part 2, which is so good, but so intense that I have to stop after a few hours of playing it. Like, it's not one of those games that you just can play and be like, I just played this game for 10 hours straight. Like, you have to, me at least, I have to like take a break and like do something else because it's just like,
it's heavy.
It's a lot. Yeah. It's very heavy.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if I could. And thank you. You got me a copy for my birthday. I have to be in the right place, I think, emotionally and mentally to crack that game open because the first one was very heavy. I mean, I have nothing but fond memories of it, but I also know it's going to be a tough journey, but I'll get there.
Very much worth it though. I highly that's another Jay's rec.
Oh man, look at all these recs coming in. Hope you guys are taking notes. Cool. Shall we start examining this episode?
We can, but first we have to play
everyone's favorite segment.
Everyone's favorite segment on the show. How tall is Lin-Manuel Miranda? How tall is Lin-Manuel Miranda?
Boom, I'll drop the sound bite in right there.
I made a drop. I don't have a job that is quite as busy as Mitchell's, so I had time to make a drop.
Hell yeah. More drops the better.
Okay,
what? What are you about to ask me?
Mitchell Hartage from Atlanta, Georgia. How tall, as of July 31st, 2020, how tall is Lin-Manuel Miranda?
So I think since our last episode, Hamilton like came out on Disney Plus. Everybody can watch Hamilton now.
And they should. That's another Jay's rec.
Another Jay's wreck. So I would say, normally I would say 5'9", but I think like in light of this amazing musical being like brought to the forefront of the consciousness of America again, and maybe giving some people some hope in our country that maybe have lost hope because of its current leader, which is reasonable. I would say that Lin-Manuel Miranda right now, 10 feet tall.
Oh!
Oh, no?
No, I'm so sorry.
Shit.
Lin-Manuel Miranda still physically is 5'9".
I was going more of a metaphorical height, I guess, but
5'9"
is good.
You nailed it.
All right. Cool. So enough about Lin-Manuel Miranda.
We don't have to keep all of that in. If
no, we'll cut some of that out. Let's talk about The O.C.
The O, the C, episode 11, The Homecoming. Fucking, it's a good episode. We're still on this run of good episodes. I know that there's a couple not so good ones on the horizon, but
you're
I'm still just
talking about the Oliver stuff.
The Oliver stuff is what
I'm strictly
referring to.
I was just cruising around on the IMDb page for the OC, like season one, and you can see like the audience ratings, I guess, for each episode. And it starts off really strong. We're like in the nines, and then there's a little bit of a dip, and we're riding the crest of a wave right now. And this episode actually was I think the highest rated one, maybe other than the Chris Mika one, like of this little chunk of episodes. And then there's a significant dip when the Oliver saga like goes through, and then it picks up again by the end of this season. So this is our first Thanksgiving with the Coens, Ryan's first Thanksgiving with the Coens. And this episode was written by Josh Schwartz, again still in the writer's room, still getting top billing on the writing credits of this, which is really impressive because like 11 episodes in, these are not, you know, half hour episodes. These are solid 45 minutes worth of writing. And
do you think, because we talked about, it might have been the last episode, I can't remember, but we were talking about how he does write a lot of these episodes. Do you think it's that he maybe at this point, like, or this is still somewhat early on in the show, that he's like not so good at like delegating
possible,
like trusting other people to write his vision? And he's just like, you know what? I'll take care of this. Don't worry. This is the Thanksgiving episode. It has to be perfect. I'll take care of it.
I mean, it's funny that like it would be that way, because this show isn't like Breaking Bad or anything. It's not like there's like this like big arc that you know, like every episode kind of like inches you closer to this big climax or anything. It's like at this point, the show's just kind of cruising, and like the characters are kind of established enough that I would think, you know, professional writers could write for them and stuff. I don't know why Josh Schwartz is as involved as he is, but I'm like, I don't hate it. He's a good writer, like, and he knows these characters better than anybody. And I guess this one kind of like dives into Ryan's past a little more than other episodes, so maybe he wanted to be close to that. But this episode was also co-written by Brian O, who writes, like, TV writer, writes on a bunch of stuff. Vampire Diaries was one that I saw his name on a lot. And this episode was directed by Keith Samples, who is maybe the perfect director for the OC. He's also, his credits also include Dawson's Creek, One Tree Hill, Oz.
Oz?
Yeah. I'm like, teen drama. Intense HBO prison show. But hey, there is a prison in this episode, so
this there is a reference to Oz in this episode.
There you go. That's Keith Samples right there.
Yeah.
The man, the myth. So this episode opens up, as they all do, with a previously on. And we get a little flashback to episode one with Trey, Ryan's brother, who, you know, we haven't seen him since episode one because he's in jail. He stole a car with Ryan, which is how Ryan met Sandy and this whole saga began. But very dismissive of Trey, like, in the upfront, Ryan was like, hey, where's my brother? And Sandy's like, he's not my problem. You're my problem. The show's about you, not him. Forget about him.
We're actually going to change the actor that plays him.
Yeah.
Very
oh,
soon,
yeah, later so on, yeah.
Don't even worry about it.
And then we have some Seth, Anna, Summer love triangle stuff in the previously on. So it's like, okay, I guess that's going to factor into this Thanksgiving. And then we have some of Caleb and Julie's affair, like bringing that back up. So that's just establishing where we're at relationship-wise. And then we open up on the Cohen's kitchen, as we always, or normally do.
Yeah.
Breakfast scene. We got the whole family. There's like a spread of like food all over the kitchen island. We're talking yams. We're talking bell peppers. We're talking onions, like everything. And Kirsten's wearing like an apron and she has a recipe book out and Seth is begging her to not cook this Thanksgiving.
Kirsten is wearing an apron. It's spotless. She clearly has never cooked anything.
It's still got the tags on it.
Yeah, it's pristine. But yeah. I love that she like was like, well, if I'm going to cook, I have to wear an apron. Those are the rules.
That's what you do when you cook. Can't get my clothes splashed on with oil or whatever people use to cook. her whole motivation here is like, well, it's Ryan's first Thanksgiving here, and I want us to make dinner as a family or whatever. And so,
which is very sweet.
It's very sweet. She her heart's in the right place, but God love her, the woman cannot cook. So nobody in the family, like everybody's in the kitchen, like Ryan, Sandy, Seth, nobody's really on Kirsten's side here, but, Seth appears to be the only one who's actively trying to stop her from cooking. Seth claims that, you know, like Thanksgiving is his favorite holiday, to which I say, what about Chrismica,
motherfucker? Yeah. The holiday he invented or claims to have invented.
Maybe Thanksgiving was his favorite at the time this episode was written. And then when they write the Christmas episode and Seth invents Chrismica, then they're like, okay, actually, this is his favorite holiday because he had a hand in its doing. And so Ryan drops the classic Ryan that's, you know, where he's like, my family was never really into the holidays. He's like, it's like, yeah, dude, we get it. Your family was garbage. That's why you're here. That's why they adopted you.
It would be more surprising if you had good Thanksgiving memories.
Yeah, yeah. It was like, well, actually, you know, like my mom put the bottle down on Thanksgiving and we came together as a family. And they, no, of course your Thanksgiving sucked. Your mom abandoned you. Like
your dad stuffed the turkey with packs of cigarettes.
Yeah, and crystal meth to hide from the cops who were banging on the door. Poor Ryan. But no, he never misses an opportunity to be like, yeah, well, we never really did that in my family. It's like, we know, dude. We know. So Kirsten's like trying to figure out what to do. She's like, I guess we'll start by like basting the turkey, and then she starts picking the turkey up by the legs like she like doesn't like which end is which, and then Sandy goes like, oh, Seth, that's how she held you as a baby.
Sandy had some good lines in this. I mean, really this whole episode, but this scene, he came out hot in this first scene with some really funny stuff.
Sandy was a lot of fun in this one. So Sandy like kind of like cuts in and he's like, I'll baste the turkey. I like basted turkeys. So it's like,
this is my favorite. He goes, I'll do it. I love to baste. You know that.
You know that I'm a baster, a master baster. And so, like, Kirsten tries to move over to, you know, like, peeling the potatoes or whatever, and Seth kind of cuts in, and he's like, I like to peel potatoes. Very therapeutic. It's very soothing. And so it's like, at every chance that Kirsten tries to take to you know, cook something, each of the boys in the house, like, intervenes, because they know that anything she touches is just going to turn to shit. Because, mm-hmm. bless her, she's a great lady, she's a great mom, great at her job.
Heart's in the right place.
Again, cannot cook to save her life. So she's like, so all the boys are doing stuff, and she's like, well, what do I do? And then the phone rings, and she's like, I'll answer the phone. And then Sandy goes, you own the phone. Which is another good. Ooh, Sandy's got some hot ones. In this up already. First couple minutes, and he's dropping these bombs. I love it.
It's Thanksgiving, baby. It's bringing the A game.
That's right. So Kirsten answers the phone, and she does like a, yes, I'll accept the charges. It was like, remember collect calls? Barely. And it is, and she says like, yeah, 1 second. And she goes, Ryan, it's for you. It's your brother. From prison.
From the previously on.
Yeah, remember from the previously on?
They do it like a few times in this scene whenever they say, like, when they're talking about Trey, when they say like Ryan's brother, they like will show Seth for a second. Mm-hmm. And Seth kind of like looks up. I couldn't tell if he was like jealous.
Yeah.
Like I'm Ryan's brother now, or that's like what they were trying to convey.
I think so. Yeah, I think there's a little bit of jealousy there from Seth because, you know, only child, never really had friends, and Ryan shows up and he's all of a sudden his best friend and his brother, and he's his age, and he's like this super cool hunky guy. And so, yeah, like anytime, like, you know, like, oh, your real brother is calling you now. Yeah, he's going to be like a little bit like, well, what's up with that? But I think like, I mean, he talks to him about it, and I think like Seth's heart's in the right place with it. Like he's never like bitter about it, you know.
I hope he stays in jail forever.
So Ryan grabs the phone, takes it to the stairs so he can have a little private conversation with Trey. And then so basically Trey wants Ryan to visit him in jail for Thanksgiving. And Ryan kind of like reluctantly agrees to this because he thinks that like, oh, he's just going to want something from me. He's going to want me to do something for him. Like, it's never just like, I want to see you. It's always like, what have you done for me lately, bro? Mm-hmm. So Ryan says he's going to help cook for Thanksgiving because they're having people over. And then he's going to go visit Trey in jail. And then he'll be back by dinner time. And Ryan obviously doesn't seem too stoked about this.
No, none of them do. And even like Sandy is like, well, that'll be great seeing your brother.
It's good.
And they're all, none of them, you can tell none of them actually think that. They're just like, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think they feel maybe a little bit like guilty. And that's kind of a theme of this episode. It's like Ryan gets like swept up into the OC. Like from episode one, and we're all along for the ride, and we're just like having fun and doing all this stuff. And then, but then it's also like, oh yeah, he had like a whole life that he left behind to show up.
We'll definitely get to it, but I like, there was a scene where I was like, oh yeah, he did just kind of leave.
Yep. Without any sort of like tying up loose ends or getting any sort of closure with anybody. Like, and that's a big theme of this episode, and I really like that they're like exploring that. It's a little bit meta, and I dig it. Mm-hmm. So then we cut to our opening credits, and then we come back from commercial, and we're back in the kitchen with Ryan and Seth. And so Ryan thinks that Trey is going to want something. He's telling Seth this, and Seth's optimistic. He's like, well, maybe he just, you know, wants to see you because it's been a while and he's your brother. And, you know, and Ryan's like, bro, you don't know my bro. And Seth's like, I know, you never talk about him. So this makes me think that Seth like kind of wants Ryan to open up a little more about his past and his family and stuff, where, you know, Ryan is notoriously a closed mouth, sort of like strong silent type. And yeah, so Seth wants Ryan to open up. Ryan just kind of wants to bury his past, it seems like. Seth offers to go with Ryan, and Ryan's like, nah, you don't want to go to jail. That's no fun. So then we cut over to our backyard grill, and we're with Sandy and Kirsten, and Sandy jumps in and again like intercepts Kirsten trying to like flip the corn. Like, they don't even trust her to like flip corn on a grill. It's like wrapped in tin foil. It's like, how do you fuck that up? And it's like, yeah, she'll find a way, trust me.
Yeah, Sandy, and it's, Sandy says they made a pact.
Yeah,
her, me and him, the boys. And him and the boys made a pact to keep her away from the food. And she was like, when? And he was like, you in the bathroom.
It's like he was just waiting. And she's just like, okay, I guess I can't do anything. I'll go to the bathroom. And he's like, all right, boys, you have to promise me.
I want to see that scene. I want him to like fucking like huddle up with them.
Yeah. And they're all like cutting their hands, and they're like, blood oath. We're not gonna let Kirsten like, touch the corn.
Ryan's like, well, maybe we can just let her do something. And Sandy like slaps Ryan in the face.
Yeah, he's like, do you have any idea what you just said?
You're new to this family, kid. We will throw you back out on the streets.
She can't even open a bag of chips without spilling them everywhere, I swear to God. Yeah, so yeah, they're keeping Kirsten off the food because they know she'll blow it, and they're having guests over, and it appears like they're talking about like the people that are coming over, and it appears that Sandy and Kirsten are trying to hook up Jimmy Cooper and Rachel, forgot her last name. I think her name is Rachel Hoffman, which is funny because it's my brother-in-law's last name, and he's a lawyer.
Oh. About it.
Huh, and he likes the OC. Shout out Scotty. What's up? And Becca. What's up? So they're trying to hook, like, they, you know, independently invited, like Sandy invited Rachel over for Thanksgiving. Kirsten invited Jimmy over. And their idea is, like, hook these two up.
They're like, we have uncomfortable chemistry with each of these people. What if we try to hook them up together? So they stop trying to hook up with us.
Yes.
This plan is gonna work.
It's bulletproof. So then like Kirsten mentions that, you know, like her dad, Caleb Nickel, is having Thanksgiving with Julie, which is next door still. And she also mentions that like he never had Thanksgiving with her and the family like prior to this, which is like shocking.
What the fuck?
Really fucked up. Like, what does he do every Thanksgiving? Just like abscond with his 20-year-old girlfriend, whoever that may be.
Yeah, he's like
week.
In Paris with Gabrielle version
4.0,
whichever one he's on at that point.
Yeah, I thought that was fucked up.
And Kirsten has this way of like throwing lines out like that about her dad.
Yeah.
That you're just like, how do you not just fucking hate your dad?
Yeah. And I get it. They're trying to write Caleb as like the villain. But I got to say in this episode, and we'll get to it later, I actually like Caleb did some stuff I kind of liked in this episode. Like, I was like kind of leaning into his bad guy persona, but in a fun way.
He had like two or three moments for me where I was same. Like, okay.
Yeah. And yeah, so I get that that's what the writers are doing here, but I'm also at the same time, I'm like, this is like very dysfunctional, like highly toxic relationship that Kirsten has with her dad. And the more she says about it, the more I just feel that like, you just need to cut this guy off. Like, you just like, I can't believe you're working for him. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. Which currently, that's all she's doing is work, because the last episode ended with her being like, we work together and that's it.
That's it.
Because on the boat, they found out about him and Julie Cooper were together now.
Yeah.
This scene was really good at like, it felt, and I guess it's also just, excuse me, we talked about, you know, Sandy and Kirsten are just really good acting together.
Yeah.
And so this could have been a real clunky scene because they're basically going down the like list of the cast and they're like, this is what this person's doing for Thanksgiving. This is what this person's doing for Thanksgiving. But it does feel very normal and natural the way that they're giving us all that information.
Oh yeah. They play it superbly as they always do. And then the scene ends with Seth like popping his head in and being like, Mom, you're uncomfortably close to the corn. Could you back up? And then Sandy kind of laughs.
That is a genuine laugh from Peter Gallagher.
Oh yeah. I love it. I was like, oh, we're having fun. This is fun.
He's an amazing actor, and I'm sure he could have given a really like great acting laugh, but it just, that I think was, he genuinely didn't know that that's what Seth was going to say, or what Adam Brody was going to say, and he genuinely laughed at it. It was great.
So, yeah.
I really loved it. He had tongs in his hands, and he's just laughing.
I love that, Adam Brody, like, tries to, it seems like Adam Brody tries to make Peter Gallagher laugh like a son would try to make his dad laugh, like a Seth Cohen would try to make a Sandy laugh. And yeah, they have these great genuine moments together like that. It's wonderful. It's some of my favorite stuff in this show. So then we cut over to Jimmy Cooper's place. I say place because I don't know if it's an apartment or a house or a townhome or whatever.
It is a apartment. It's a loft style apartment, I'd say, because there is an upstairs.
Yeah, it has
we
an
see
upstairs.
Stairs. We don't know where they go.
Right, and it's like you come in from a landing on the front. It's not like you have to climb a flight of stairs to get to his place. You like walk up to it. Whatever, it's Jimmy's fucking place. It's Jimmy and Marissa. So they write Caitlin out like immediately. They're just like, Caitlin's having Thanksgiving with her grandparents. Let's not talk about it anymore. And so I'm just like, okay, Shailene Woodley, I guess you're not showing up in this Thanksgiving episode.
Again, it's this thing of, and they don't, these two don't do it quite as well. Even though it's just like one line, it's really not that important.
Yeah.
But it's like Josh Schwartz thought we would have like the whole roster of characters. And we're like, we need to know what each one of these people are doing. What was Luke doing for Thanksgiving?
Yeah, where's Luke during all this? Luke
doesn't show up once. They never said it. There was never a scene with two characters where they brought him up.
I want to know what Luke's doing for Thanksgiving. But yeah, and sometimes I wonder, like, why do they even have Caitlin as a character? Like, Marissa's younger sister. Like, why is she here? Like, why even write her into the show? Why can't Marissa be an only child? Because
I don't know enough about Shailene Woodley. Which, did she do other stuff as a kid? Like, the first thing I saw her in was this, but I didn't know who she was.
Right.
But like, was she on like a Disney Channel show, or like, did she do a, was she like not available during certain episodes? So they had to say, she's at grandma's.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Let's see here. So she was in a TV series called The District from 2001 to 2003. Which may have overlapped with the OC, because the OC was going 2003, 2004. Well, no, we would still be in 2003 now, because we're at Thanksgiving, so.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was in a TV series called Without a Trace for one episode, and she was actually in Everybody Loves Raymond in 2004 as Snotty Girl Number 2.
Holy shit, that was her!
Of course you know what episode I'm talking about. So yeah, she was working around this time. So yeah, she may have been kind of like, and the SAG, the Screen Actors Guild, I believe, and union, they're like a union, and they have very strict guidelines around like child actors and like how many hours a day they can work and stuff like that. So yeah, I wonder if she had just like hit her max number of hours on another show or something. They were like, sorry, Josh Schwartz, you can't have her this one. But I mean, what would she have done anyway? What she does every episode, she says like one line and dresses in a funny outfit. And that's it.
Sure, what? I don't like Thanksgiving.
Yeah. I don't like turkey. So yeah, she's written out immediately. And then Jimmy and Marissa are having Thanksgiving with Caleb and Julie?
They're stopping over, I guess, just to like, I think Jimmy says like for an hour.
Okay.
So they're going to awkwardly, or maybe just Marissa. Maybe he's just dropping Marissa off or something, although she can drive. But I think the idea is, yeah, they're going to go over to Caleb's or Julie's.
Like Marissa goes to Caleb and Julie's and eats with them, and then Jimmy's eating at the Cohen's?
Yes.
Is that the deal? Okay.
Yes.
That makes sense. That makes sense because they're right next door. Easy. Okay, so that's kind of all that scene is. And then we go over to Seth's room.
That scene didn't need to happen because you and I just broke it down for way longer than we needed to.
Yeah.
And even after breaking it down, it was like, we could have just, you know.
Yeah.
That scene could have just not happened. And
it could have been handled with the Kirsten Sandy scene previously where they're just going down the list of everybody. And they're just like, what about Marissa?
Oh, yeah.
Well, what about Caitlin? Yeah.
I heard she's going to her grandmother's.
A little bird told me. Yeah. Whatever, throwaway scene. So then we bounce over to Seth's room. We're with Seth and Ryan. And Seth is getting comics for Ryan to take to Trey. And I really, really like this moment where you see just how into comics Ryan has gotten. So he's like shows up and Seth's like going to give him Titans. And Ryan's like, well, Legion is way better. Like this run of Legion is way better. And Seth's like, yeah, you're right. It is better.
Like, this is when Seth goes, have you seen Oz? Like he'll be fine with anything. Like here, oh, yeah. Titans good.
There's your Oz reference.
Yeah. And then he goes, you're right, Legion would probably be cooler.
Legion's cooler. So then Ryan notices Seth has like cologne on his dresser.
Oh, I just real quick about the comic stuff.
Yeah.
So like now we look back on it and you know, there's a Legion TV show. It's a lot more popular than I imagine it was back in like 2003. And I was wondering if like Titans and which became Teen Titans and Legion, like these aren't like Spider-Man, Captain America.
Yeah, these are kind of like deep cut.
Big titles. And I wondered if it was like, it was cheaper for them to just go with the more like obscure stuff, or did they really want Seth to seem like very like
this motherfucker,
very into comics. Like this guy's got clout. Like this guy is, he's got street cred in the comic community because he's reading Titans and Legion.
I think it's probably the latter. I don't know the copyright laws on just like mentioning characters like Batman and Superman. Oh shit, I just said their names. We're going to have to pay a fine. but they do have the episode with like the Spider-Man kiss where Seth's wearing the Spider-Man mask and stuff. So, I mean, that granted, that's like, you know, a later season. Maybe they got a bigger budget, but I don't know. I think it's kind of the same way that he's like, you know, Death Cab for Cutie is his favorite band. And they were, while popular, they were never like major label. He wasn't like, oh, Dave Matthews Band is my favorite.
Right.
You know, it was always a little like he had an indie taste. And so I would have assumed that like the same thing went for comics. So
regardless, he gives him one issue, which, unless it's like a one shot, which very few are, like that issue ends and it's fucking to be continued. Like he didn't even give him a run of Legion. He gave him one issue of Legion. He's going to fucking read it and never know what happened.
He's going to be like, what the hell happens next? I got to know what happens next. Oh man, prison just got harder.
He's got to call Ryan again.
Yeah, hey bro. He's
got to do this whole thing.
Could you come back? And Ryan's like, what do you want? He's like, I just want the next comic book.
I got to figure out what happens.
What happens to Legion? So Ryan notices Seth has like cologne on his dresser and he's like, oh, you got this because Anna is coming to Thanksgiving. And now we know that Anna's coming to Thanksgiving. That's fun.
Mm-hmm.
And Ryan
off our list.
Yeah, all the characters. Ryan is totally Team Anna here. He's like talking her up. He's like, she's cool. She's into you. Like, why don't you, like, why are you still hung up on Summer? Like, go for her. And then Seth tells Ryan, and he says, like, you gotta swear to never tell anybody because she'll kill me, that Summer kissed him when they were on the yacht last episode. And, Seth says, like, you know, for the first 16 years of my life, I had no women. Now I have two. So, age confirmed. They're 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I think we were going back and forth on, like, how old are these kids supposed to be? And there's even, like, I think there's even, like, a plot hole, because, like, if you're starting the school year and you're 16, you're a junior in high school, right?
Yes. I guess depending when your birthday is.
Okay, so you could be, like, if he just turned 16, he could be a sophomore.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I remember when I got my driver's license, I was a sophomore.
But they were driving, these kids were driving at over summer break. So that makes me think that they're going into the school year as 16-year-olds, which would make them juniors. So there's a fun theory on the internet, because it's like season one.
I'm so excited about this.
Season one, because people have analyzed that, I guess. Season one, they're 16, so they're juniors, but they're not seniors in high school until season three. So what are they in season two? And I think the prevailing theory is that they were all held back a year because of all the antics that they got into.
Well, because they all, like, leave. Well, Seth and Ryan both leave at the end of season one.
Right.
And I guess they're back by the
time school starts. It's supposed to be, like, yeah, over, they're gone, like, all summer and then come back on season two for the start of the school year. But there is, like, there's a big fucking glaring issue there that, like, are they juniors 2 years in a row, or, like, what's going on here?
Or maybe it's just,
maybe private school is different.
Now I'm trying to, like, think about every episode. It's my brain is exploding.
Yeah.
But they are 16.
They're 16. Confirmed. Seth just confirmed it.
Mm-hmm.
And Ryan's like, oh, it must be so hard, you know, having two women, being all sarcastic. Seth's like, I liked you better when you didn't have a sense of humor. And then Ryan, like, kind of pantomimes, like, hitting Seth in the face with the comic book, but he, like, stops. He, like, stops himself, like, before he hits him with the book.
Mm-hmm.
That's a callback to, like, episode one or two, where he hits him with the map in the face. Do you remember?
Callback!
Callback!
And that's what they call a callback in comedy, Ryan.
A big one!
It's a subtle one. Because it's like the same shot. It's the same shot that they used in, it was episode one or two, where, remember where Seth gives Ryan the map and he's just like, you know, it's full of, like, cool places to go or whatever.
It's the end of episode one.
Yeah. And then they have, it's like kind of a sweet moment. And then Ryan kind of, like, breaks it up by, like, slapping Seth in the face with the map. And then he, like, laughs and they walk out. And the same thing happens in this episode, but he's got the comic book and he, like, goes to slap him and he, like, stops himself and says, like, ah, and they're like, ah, gotcha. And they walk out and I'm just like, oh shit. I love that. I love that.
Another thing, and I know I'm fixating on the comic books. Seth doesn't bag or board his comics.
He doesn't. They're just
in a box.
Yep. Real amateur move there, Seth.
Yeah. And fucking Ryan's rolling it up.
Like, I know, slapping
him really
in the face.
If he really gave a shit, he'd be like, oh.
He's like,
unless he buys two issues, one to read and one to bag and board. He's fucking rich. He probably does that.
He's probably got a whole room in the house. You know, like, they make Ryan live in the pool house. It's like, you know, there's additional
comics room. Yeah.
He's like, why don't I just go move into this room? It's right here. It's next to Seth. Seth's like, no. That's my comic book room. You can't go in there. Nobody can go in there. It's got a dehumidifier. It's like, it needs
perfect,
to be
perfect 77 degrees.
Yeah, room temperature. It's important. but also, like, they're giving this comic to a guy in prison. They're never going to see that comic again. It's mm-mm. probably going to be used as toilet paper or something. So yeah, roll it up. Who cares? So then we cut over to the Cohen's front door. Kirsten and Sandy, doorbell. Kirsten and Sandy answer. It's Jimmy and Marissa. And Marissa's just stopping by to say hey before she has to go to her mom's for Thanksgiving. And while the adult...
By hey, yeah. She means...
Oh, you know what she means. Ryan. Yes. I really liked the way they played that. The adults are all talking. And then Marissa goes up to Ryan. She's like, you want to go talk in the pool house? And I'm like, you know what talk means. It means they're going to go make out.
We'll use our mouths for different things.
And Ryan goes, your pool house or mine? And then I just thought, like, how far you've come, Chino. How far you've come. So Sandy and Kirsten they're like ripping, they're kind of ripping Jimmy for how he looks. They're like, oh, you tucking the shirt in and your hair's like that, huh?
Yeah, they're complimenting him, but not doing a good job.
It's like a backhanded compliment.
Yeah.
Because they're kind
Which
of like.
He looks like he always does.
He looks like Jimmy. Granted, his pants are a little high and his shirt is very tucked in.
It's a tuck-in.
It's a tuck-in. You don't want to let that blouse hang out. It's a tuck-in.
Another great Sandy line. It's yeah. a tuck-in.
It's a tuck-in. they're like, you wore your hair like that. Okay. And it's just fucking Jimmy's like Caesar hair. Like, this is dumb Caesar haircut. And Jimmy's like, well, yeah, it's just us, right? I mean, like, who cares? And, boy, you don't know. You got a blind date situation going, Jimmy. Surprise
it's
blind
Thanksgiving.
Date.
Thanksgiving. It's the most romantic day of the year.
Where you stuff yourself full of turkey and mac and cheese and, like, fart out while you watch football all day.
And imagine a made-up situation where pilgrims and Native Americans got along and ate together.
Yeah. Which is not true. So then we move over to the pool house. Ryan and Marissa are, of course, making out. Duh. That's what they meant by talking. Ryan mentions that, you know, he's going to visit Trey in jail. And Marissa wants to come with him to see where, you know, like, Ryan's from. Because I guess the jail is also in Chino. And Ryan, again, is not stoked about his past. So he's just like, you know, that's not my life anymore. You know, like, he's trying to bury it. Other people are like, open up, let us in, let us learn about you. He's not into it. So then we go over, the doorbell rings again, and we move over to Cohen's front door, and Sandy and Kirsten answer, and it's Rachel!
I'm Rachel! Not in this situation, but later in this episode, there was a perfect time for her to say, I'm Rachel. Her signature catchphrase.
I know.
She blew it.
She totally blew it. I wish that was her catchphrase. And I wish that she leaned into it a little more. Just accepted it. That's your catchphrase. I'm Rachel. It's fun. So she and Sandy give each other a big cheek kiss. It was a deep cheek kiss. Like, it's like, oh, you brought wine. Hey, thanks for coming. Mwah. But it's like a mwah. And then she awkwardly hugs Kirsten because there's a little tension there.
It's unclear when the last episode and this episode, like, how much time has passed.
Yeah.
But, like, I wonder, I assume, like, they've, you know, because the last time we saw Sandy and Rachel together, she tries to make a move on him, and he says,
right,
I got a boat to catch.
Right.
And he leaves.
It's the last thing.
And so, and then he invites her over for Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
it's kind of weird.
I know it's to try to hook her and Jimmy up.
Yeah.
I guess in Sandy's mind, he's like, then she won't,
so she'll,
you know,
leave me alone.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know, I was just thinking, like, talking about all these holiday episodes they have. They never did, like, a Halloween episode.
They didn't.
Fucking pisses me off.
Mm.
They never had a spooky OC episode. It's bullshit.
Oh well.
Anyway, because that's my favorite holiday. Who says Thanksgiving is their favorite holiday? Get bent. All right, so where are we? Yeah, awkward hug between Rachel and Kirsten because
they both kind of hold the arms up.
Yeah,
and are like, I think Rachel even goes, ah.
So Jimmy enters, and they remember meeting each other at La Roca, the Mexican restaurant.
Oh, wait. Where, but before,
yeah,
and there's a reason that I'm doing this. Before Jimmy walks in, Rachel, because I guess this is the first time she's been at Sandy and Kirsten's house. She like walks in the living room she goes like, "Oh, so this is the summer home." And Sandy goes, "That's Rachel for I like your house."
Right.
Remember that, because that's a
like how Rachel speaks to people.
Oh no, just that's so and so for.
Oh, that's okay. That's blank for. That's like their way of saying yada yada.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay, yes. And then, they're getting the little tour, giving a little tour to Rachel. Jimmy enters. They remember meeting each other at La Roca, even though Rachel was fucking hammered at that time. There's a bit of an awkward silence. Sandy and Kirsten excuse themselves to the kitchen, and Jimmy and Rachel are like left in the den to, I guess, just like kind of talk to each other. But I think they kind of like, they're looking at each other like, oh, they're like trying to set us up. I see.
Yeah.
I see. Yeah. They both seem to be kind of wise to Sandy and Kirsten's plan here.
And then Sandy and Kirsten walk into the kitchen and Sandy goes, "We suck.
We suck." And Kirsten is like, "Not smooth. Not smooth at all." Oh yeah, you guys are blowing it. So it's not a strong also it's like you kind of sprung this on them, like you didn't inform either person that they would be like meeting a potential boyfriend girlfriend here. You just right. kind of threw them into this situation together, so of course it's going to be a little awkward. So Ryan walks in and he's like, "I'm going to take off." And Sandy gives Ryan his cell phone. Do you notice
that's, this? I made a note of that.
Yeah. So that makes me think.
Why?
I thought that they all had their own cell phones.
They do.
What's going on?
I don't know. I know Ryan has used what I assumed was his cell phone.
Is he just like borrowing Sandy's episodes. Cell phone every time he goes out? What's going on?
Maybe it's Ryan has like a minutes limit.
Oh yeah.
It's Thanksgiving. It's like the end of the month. You might have run out of minutes.
Yeah, true. You know, minutes are double on holidays.
Minutes used to be a huge deal. Do you remember?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if I ever like was like, "Hey, I can't talk. I'm out of minutes." I think I always just like talked as long as I wanted to, and then my mom yelled at me.
Yeah. No, I feel like whenever I went over my minutes, it was, I heard about it.
I got grounded for going over my minutes.
Yeah. That was also when, I would talk on the phone to, you know, girls or friends for hours.
Yeah, that's when.
About nothing.
Yeah, that was before people texted, so we would just talk to each other forever on the phone. Yes, about nothing. So Kirsten gives Ryan a pie from the fridge to give to Trey. Very sweet gesture. And she reassures him, "Don't worry, it's store-bought. I wouldn't dream of giving your brother a pie that I made." And
it's
Ryan,
also wrapped in like
it is
saran wrap.
Like. Yes, it looks like she just pulled it out of the fridge at Publix. Like,
yeah,
definitely a store-bought pie. Ryan seems relieved that it's a store-bought pie. So
it's very sweet because I, Yeah, I in this moment, I was just like thinking about like, you know, Ryan is their new son. Like they adopted Ryan. This is his first Thanksgiving, but they're still like supporting. Like Sandy gives Ryan his phone. Mm-hmm. Kirsten gives a pie. And like Seth, which I'm sure we'll talk about, he goes in and gives him like the dab, like the
bro hug,
handshake. Yeah. And it's like he's a part of their family now, but they're like, go see your brother. It's Thanksgiving. And then you'll come back. Mm-hmm. And this is your home now.
Yeah.
But we're not going to be like, you can't, this is where you need to be. Like it's this very, it feels like they're all like figuring it out kind of thing.
Yeah. Of, and like, I think how are we
going to do Thanksgiving?
It.
But
yeah,
it's great.
They're handling it very well, very gracefully. Like they're like, yes, you have a brother. It's Thanksgiving. You should go see your brother. Like they're being very gracious about it. It's great. So yeah, then Seth comes in, gives him a bro hug, bye. And like, I love that, like, he goes in for the hug, and then Ryan's just like, oh. And Seth's like, is it too much cologne? Too much? And then Ryan kind of like grimaces. And it's just such like a great exchange. And it's like, it's, in my opinion, some of the best acting Ben McKenzie's done on the show up until this point.
He doesn't have to say words. He just kind of
just like,
makes a face and a sound, and it's perfect.
Yeah, and so Ryan,
and then Seth goes, did you guys hear? Ryan's funny now.
Yeah. That's how the scene ends. Ryan's a funny one now. Isn't that great? What can't he do?
Seth's Argyle sweater with the like collared shirt underneath throughout this episode really took me back to 2003.
Big look.
I was like, that's what I wore for Thanksgiving.
Had that exact outfit, yeah. Yeah, big look for early aughts. And then just with like jeans and like sneakers, like Vans or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the look. So then we move over to the Cohen's driveway. Ryan opens the car door to get in, and Marissa is sitting in the passenger seat. Fun.
How long was she sitting in the passenger seat?
Great question.
How much time has passed since she left the pool house?
Do you think she didn't go to, as we'll find out later, she did not go to Julie's house.
Right.
She probably just went straight. She's probably been sitting in that car for like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Sweating. The windows are rolled up. You got that. I mean, it's November, but it's still California heat. It's real. Yeah. So Marissa's like dehydrated and sweating in the passenger seat.
Regretting her decision.
Yeah, like, why didn't I just hang out next to the car? Ryan's like, what are you doing? And Marissa's like, I'm coming with you. And she's like very pleasant about holding Ryan hostage. And Ryan's like, he doesn't seem very stoked about this at first, but he says, thanks. Like, you know, I guess he's thankful that Marissa's so aggressively supportive or whatever.
Because I guess you kind of have to be with Ryan.
Yeah.
Especially in regards to like his past.
You got to elbow your way in there. Yeah.
Yeah. So he does, he like in his very Ryan way goes, thanks.
Thanks, I guess. Hold the pie. Yeah. So they drive off and then we go to commercial and we come back from commercial and we're in the prison yard with Ryan and Marissa. And they're walking in, and it's like a, you know, it's like an outdoor sort of picnic table situation, I guess, is how they have like visits in this prison. And Ryan's carrying the pie. I noticed like when they're walking up to Trey, there are like two small children sitting at a table, and they're facing the opposite direction, like they're facing away from the table. And I'm like, what the fuck are these kids doing here?
Just by themselves?
It's weird because, you know, you would think like picnic table, right? You sit at a bench, the prisoner sits on one side and the family member sits on the other, and they face each other and they talk. Mm-hmm. And these kids are turned around, not talking to anybody. There's like a prisoner sitting next to the kids talking with somebody else. And I'm like, who are these children and what are they doing here? And why aren't they facing the right direction? Like, what's going on? It was so weird.
What if the prison guard was like, hey, kids, face the right direction.
Hey, kids, how'd you get in here? What are you doing here? Yeah, I maybe...
It's Thanksgiving. They just let people in and out.
It's Thanksgiving. Let them have some fun. So Trey, who's the same actor as Trey from the first episode.
Yes, I looked it up. Bradley Stryker.
Yes, we haven't recast Trey yet. We still got the same Trey.
This is his last episode though, as Trey.
Yeah. I thought he was good though.
I think so. I think I like the other Trey better, but yeah, this guy does a good job. He doesn't have to do that much. But
no, he's really not doing much. And yes, I agree. The other Trey is better. He's a little more sympathetic. But yeah, this Trey is great. I think the problem with this Trey is maybe he was too old. He's supposed to be like 19 or 20 years old. I'm like, this guy looks like he's 30.
Yeah. He looks like he could have. Yeah. Maybe not like Ryan's dad, but like much older
uncle.
Brother.
Yeah. So
I wish to whenever in season two, when Trey gets out of prison and it's, Logan Marshall Green,
mm-hmm.
I wish that they just made Ryan said something like, you look different.
Yeah.
Or just something like that.
Just a little subtle, like they did in Iron Man when they recast Terrence Howard with Don Cheadle.
Yes.
It is just like, I'm here. It's me. Get over it. Yeah, something like that would have been fun. But no, they're just like, oh, yeah, it's the same guy.
Yeah.
You've changed in prison, man. Well, like that would have been good. So Trey's like, he's got like this busted lip and a black eye, and he's like, it's good to see you, Ryan. And Marissa kind of backs out. She's just like, I'm gonna let you catch up. And Ryan's just straight, he's all business. He's like, what do you want? Trey's like, hey, come on, man. Can a guy see his bro on Thanksgiving? Well, now that you mention it, it's just like, well, yeah, of course I want something.
Right.
He like doesn't really do much to defend that point of view.
Nah.
So apparently
Ryan's too wise to it.
Yeah, he knows. Grew up with him. So apparently
he looks over at Marissa and she's sitting at the table with the kids and she's also facing the wrong way.
She's like, you're right. It is a really good view of the city. So Trey,
did you notice too that any of the like prison, any of the prison scenes or any of the Chino scenes, like, and maybe you can explain it better, but it's like, it looks like different film almost. Like it's very grainy and very gray. It's so starkly like contrast from like when they're in Newport.
Where it's like saturated and like well lit and yeah, so that's a technique where it's like a colorist technique, and I mean it could have been in the like production notes or whatever, but so you'll notice it. I notice it whenever they go to Mexico in like anything, like Breaking Bad, like any show or movie. When they go to Mexico, they give Mexico like a yellow tint.
Mm-hmm.
You notice that, and yeah, it's a technique to be like, that's what this place is like, just to kind of differentiate it. Because in reality, they're probably just shooting down the street from where they're shooting the rest of the show. But yeah, to give it, I guess it's to give it more of that, like, yeah, kind of gritty, kind of like, I don't know, lower income feel, which is,
I mean,
like,
I was trying to figure, like, I feel like some of the scenes, because this whole episode is just back and forth between, like, basically from this point on, is like Newport Chino, and like there are like it's very noticeable,
mm-hmm.
and it was almost, I didn't know if they thought like, well, maybe what if the audience forgets that they're in Chino?
They're in Chino. Or something. Yeah, it's a subtle kind of visual cue to like let you know where you are, I guess, but That's all done in like post production, like color correction usually. But good eye picking up on that. Look at you.
Hey,
you, you went to film school.
I took a few classes. I wrote a 5-page paper about The Departed, and 2.5 of those pages were about the rat at the end.
Oh man. What a metaphor.
I don't remember what class it was. You were in it with me, and we had to write, like a 5-page paper about any movie. And I was like, if I pick a really long movie, there'll be more stuff to write about.
There you go.
And then I was like, but then I have to fucking watch a 3.5-hour movie like 10 times.
Ugh. It's kind of like when, and now we do it for every episode of the OC.
I know, but this is for fun.
That's true. I'm not getting graded on this. Except for on iTunes, be sure to leave a review.
Be sure to leave us an A+.
Yeah. So apparently Trey owes people $6,000, I guess, on the outside. And he says, what?
Do you think that's why they were stealing that car in the pilot episode?
Yeah, I think that's it. Right? I think he even mentions that in this episode or something.
Yeah, well, because I feel like in the pilot episode, I just assume, oh, they're stealing that car for themselves.
It seems like a joyride situation.
Right. And
in
then
the pilot, you're right.
Rewatching this scene, it was like, oh, he probably took that. His plan before he wrecked it was like to take that car that they stole to this chop shop or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. What? That? Yeah, maybe. I'm not sure. I don't think that they like connect the dots like that. Like they do in TV now, where people like binge shows and stuff, where it's week to week, and there's no like Netflix or whatever, where you can just like you connect all the dots like that. Nah. They're just like, oh, and like, they just needed a plot point for this character to ask something of Ryan, where Ryan felt the stakes of it, where it's like, oh, if I don't help my brother out right now, he might get murdered in prison.
Right.
Which is the case. Like, he's like, I owe these people six.
So you're accusing me of overthinking the OC, Mitchell? Is that what
I would
I'm hearing
never,
right now?
Because that's literally what the point of this podcast is. I'm saying we're thinking about it more maybe than Josh Schwartz did.
Yes.
When he was writing it. So he's like, I owe these people $6,000, and they've got friends in here who like to remind me, hence the black eye. And Ryan's like, I don't have that kind of money. And Trey's like, I'm not asking you for the money. And then Ryan's like, what are you asking me in that case? And then before we can hear what it is, we cut away because it's better to show, not tell. And we're in the car with Ryan and Marissa. And Ryan tells Marissa that he's dropping her off at a bus station and he's going to take a car to a chop shop to pay off Trey's debt. That's what's going to happen. That's the plan. And Marissa's like, no, I don't want to go on a bus. I want to go with you. Ryan's just like, okay, I didn't want you to come here in the first place, but I guess you're going to be an accomplice in this probable crime that I'm committing right now. So here we go.
Marissa's whole plight in this episode is to whatever Ryan says, she's like, no.
Yeah.
I want to go visit your brother with you. And he's like, no, you can't.
You don't want
to. Like, but I want to. And he's like, no, you can't. And then she's like, I'm going to. I'm going to drop you off because I got to go to this thing. No, I want to. No, I'm going to drop you off. I'm going to. Like, it's just very much like.
She's like, I'm along for the ride and nobody ever tells me no ever because I'm Marissa Cooper.
Ever.
And so I'm going to get my way and you're going to take me to do this car thing. So then we go over to the saturated, well-lit Cohen's kitchen, and we're with Sandy and Kirsten, and they cannot believe that Seth has a girl coming over. And enter Seth and Anna. and get some intros. Mom, Dad, this is Anna. Anna, this is Mom, Dad. Sandy asks if her family isn't into celebrating, quote, the genocide of the American Indian. Sandy Cohen is so woke, even though he said
Berkeley Indian. Berkeley graduate. Yeah.
But yeah, he gets it. He knows the score. Mm. Anna says that that her family went to Pittsburgh for Thanksgiving with, you know, their extended family or whatever. And it's a family which she doesn't enjoy being around, so she wanted to stay here. She says it's sort of an anathema anathema to the whole spirit of Thanksgiving. And then Sandy Cohen is so stoked that she used the word anathema in a sentence.
He mouths it to Seth when Anna turns her back.
And he's like pumping his fist. He's like, anathema, anathema,
anathema. Which I had anathema. To look up because I didn't know what that word meant.
I'm pretty sure I didn't pronounce it correctly the like five times I just said it.
Anathema, something or someone that one vehemently dislikes.
Why couldn't you just say you didn't like your family, Anna? See, this was
because
a moment where
she's using these words to win Sandy Cohen over. Also, bold move bringing a possible girlfriend to Thanksgiving. Like, that's a weird way to, like, introduce someone to your parents.
It is. Going to Thanksgiving is more of like, we've been in a relationship for like about a year at least.
Yeah.
And like now, like we're going to, like you come to my parents' place or I go to yours or whatever. Like, I feel like when you, like before, like they're not even dating at this point. Like, but like you just do your own Thanksgiving. But I guess like her family went out of town. She didn't want to go. So she probably told Seth that. Seth was like, well, hey, you can come to my parents' house for Thanksgiving, whatever. Makes sense. This is just like an excuse to bring all these characters in together and to get Seth in the predicament that he's about to find himself in.
Oh boy,
here we go. So yeah, Sandy's in love with Anna. He's like, she's so smart, she's so cool, way to go, son. Anna starts to prep a sweet potato casserole. Sandy and Kirsten excuse themselves. Sandy pats Seth on the back as he leaves, like, hey, attaboy.
So fucking stoked about Anna.
Yeah, he's team Anna all the way. Seth's, and then, okay, so like from this point on, Seth like starts kind of looking at Anna like, oh shit, like maybe I do like you. Like, you got Ryan's approval, you got my father's approval, like, they're both...
Caleb's approval.
Yeah, Caleb. Yeah, she made a splash with Caleb on the yacht in the last episode. He's kind of like, not that like these people's approval should necessarily factor into whether or not you like want to pursue a romantic relationship with this person, but like, I don't know. I think it just, maybe it helped open Seth's eyes to the fact that like, yeah, you guys are really good together. She really likes you. And like everybody that whose opinion you do care about really likes her too. So like, why are you sleeping on this one, Cohen? Come on.
It's just making a fucking sweet potato casserole.
I know.
Come on now.
Come on. So then we cut over to Cohen's backyard with Rachel and Sandy. And Rachel makes it clear that she is not cool with them trying to hook her up with Jimmy. Because
is Sandy still grilling corn?
At this point, I hope not. And I know you can't really overcook...
Because they're by the grill, right?
Yes.
Like, maybe how much grilled food do you eat on Thanksgiving? Like, Thanksgiving's all about, like,
oven
casseroles
food.
And ovens and pots and stuff.
My grandma would get up at, like, 3 in the morning to, like, cook Thanksgiving dinner, you know, like it would take her like literally
all day,
like 18 hours to make this food. It's crazy. But yeah, it's all oven stuff. It's all like slow cooked, you know, oven stuff. But Yeah, I guess they're doing...
I know
doing...
we texted a little bit about this, but I really do... I'm not crazy about the holiday of Thanksgiving,
yeah.
but I fucking love Thanksgiving food. Like, I just want to... I want to eat Thanksgiving. It's probably too hot now.
Yeah.
But, like, as soon as it starts getting cool, like, fucking turkey and mashed potatoes and sweet potato, like, all give it all of it to me. Yeah. I love it. It's so good.
Yeah, yeah. It's food that really, like, knocks you on your ass, too. It's not like... I just realized during quarantine how much I really enjoy just, like, getting a full belly. Like, a full belly. Just, like, sitting there and digesting it. And that's what Thanksgiving's all about. It's about stuffing yourself. Like a turkey. But, so, Rachel's... They're by the grill. Rachel's not cool with them trying to hook up Jimmy. Because she, of course, knows that Jimmy's a white-collar criminal. Like, right. It's, like, one of the first things... She said to Sandy when he was interviewing at the firm was just like, she was like, I can't believe what you did with the Jimmy Cooper case. Like, you got him off, whatever. So she's like, that guy's a white collar criminal. I'm not interested.
Rachel, she also says, like, and because of what you and I have.
Yeah. Which is, like, which was weird. Cause Sandy's like, what are you talking about? We work together and that's it. Like, I don't know how many different ways I can let you down gently here, Rachel, yeah. but
I have a boat to catch.
You're in my house with my wife right there. Like, fucking let it go. Yeah. I thought it was weird that she brought that up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she doesn't appear to be giving up, but whatever, Rachel. I can't wait for you to leave. We go over to the dining room. We're with Jimmy and Kirsten now, and Jimmy gets it. He's like, oh, this is a setup. You're trying to hook me up with Rachel. And Kirsten's like deflecting. She's like, oh, should we do orange candles or brown candles? I'm just like, why are you ignoring Jimmy? Like, yeah, obviously this is what you're doing. Like, quit ignoring the guy.
So, wouldn't it be better?
Yeah.
I mean, we talk about this all the time on this show. Like, if they just actually said it, or like, yeah, we thought maybe you guys would hit it off.
Yeah, I don't know why they're being so coy about this.
Like, Kirsten is just not speaking. She's just, he's like, go ahead and say it. And it, like, cuts to her and she's like,
yeah, like, what the
and
fuck?
That's the end of the scene. Yeah,
what are you doing? So then we cut, I guess it's a little bit later, we go over to the, like, the game room where Ryan and Seth always play games because it's where the TV is. Jimmy's watching football. He said, and Rachel's there with him, and he says, like, hey, I didn't know this was like a blind date setup. And Rachel's like, I didn't know either. And so they start watching the game. And they realize that they're rooting for opposite teams. Jimmy's a Miami Dolphins guy.
All great romances.
Yes.
They start over a football game.
A football game.
Where they're both cheering for the opposite teams.
Yes.
Also, Jimmy Cooper is a Miami Dolphins fan.
Yeah, that's weird.
Like, he's grown up in Newport, which is California, his whole life.
Why isn't he like a Raiders fan or something, you know?
Yeah, Raiders, 49ers, the Rams were still over there when he was growing up, like, and they're back over there. I guess Dan Marino was good, but, like, it's so fucking weird that he was a Dolphins fan.
That is strange to me, yeah. And Rachel is a Dallas Cowboys fan. But, I mean, like, people are Dallas Cowboys fans, whatever. Yeah. I noticed that, like, so, like, I guess the Dolphins get a touchdown and Jimmy gives the most impotent, he could go all the way, woo. Like, it is the saddest woo-hoo I've ever heard in my life. He doesn't even go falsetto. He doesn't go like, woo. He goes like, woo-hoo. Like,
so maybe he's not that big of a Dolphins fan.
I couldn't help but notice that. It's so strange. Anyway, so then we cut over to the kitchen doorway, and it's from the backyard. Sandy and Kirsten, they're kind of like peeping in on everybody. Like, they see Seth and Anna getting on pretty well, and then they see Jimmy and Rachel. They're bonding over ESPN classic callback.
Callback!
Market!
Market!
And that's what they call a callback in comedy, you're on.
Dude, I was like, as soon as Jimmy and sports are like happening in a room, I was like, I know he's going to bring up ESPN Classics.
Dude.
And if she also says that she likes ESPN Classics, then I know.
I lost you. You're back.
I'm back.
Okay.
My dad was calling me.
Dad.
Dad, I'm recording a podcast.
But dude, yeah, like it was so funny because they're sitting there watching a live football game, and then Jimmy's just like, "Hey, you ever watch ESPN Classics?" and she goes,
"I love ESPN Classics. It's so," and they both go, "Soothing."
Yeah, and is it? I guess it's
maybe
like
because you know the outcome.
Yeah, it's like a nostalgia thing. I get it. We started watching old wrestling. Like Ashley got a WWE subscription.
Oh shit!
And we started watching wrestling, and I'm watching old like Shawn Michaels matches and stuff from like the late '90s, early aughts, and it is like weirdly comforting because I'm just like, you know, reliving a part of my childhood, and it's soothing. I get it.
I get it.
ESPN Classics. So then doorbell rings.
You should watch Dark Side of the Ring. J-Wreck.
Another J-Wreck. I do really want to check that out now that I'm like getting back into wrestling. But then we go over
most of them real bummers because that's kind of what happens to old wrestlers, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I even feel like guilty watching WWE because like they're just like notoriously like shitty to all their wrestlers, like they like don't have like health insurance and they're considered like 1099 like contract workers, like they're not like really supported in a way that a lot of professional athletes are, and it's a bummer. Like these guys like just fucking break their backs for 30 plus years, like a lot of them longer than that. Like the Undertaker's like pushing 60 and has had so many surgeries. I don't want to go down this road. But it's still massively entertaining. It's so much fun to watch. So the doorbell rings, ding dong, Cohen's front door.
Sandy, oh wait. I really did love the it's like Sandy and Kirsten, like I guess they were outside or whatever. They like kind of walk in. They see Seth and Anna getting along well. They look over. They see Rachel and Jimmy getting along well, talking about ESPN Classics. They like clink their glasses together. They're like,
nothing
can go wrong. And then
cue the doorbell.
Ding dong.
Who's at the door? Who is that? It's Julie.
I do love this episode every time, I guess except for when Summer rings the doorbell and Seth answers it, but every time the doorbell rings, Sandy and Kirsten both answer
together.
The door together.
Yeah. Walking arm in arm to the front door. Yes, I love that too. But they weren't expecting these guests. No, it's Julie and Caleb, or as Sandy calls them, the gruesome twosome.
Which then Kirsten says, that's Sandy for Happy Thanksgiving.
Callback.
And that's what they call a callback in comedy, you're on.
Market! That's a good one. So apparently, Julie and Caleb's caterer's truck broke down, and they're here to tell Marissa that they're going out for dinner. Except Marissa's not there.
Mm-mm.
Caleb invites himself in, and Julie comes in with him, and they're just gonna eat at the Coens now.
Caleb says, I forgot the game's on.
Ah, yes, because he's such a big football fan.
Big football fan, but there's always football on Thanksgiving.
Like,
since before I was born.
Oh, you mean the Dolphins-Cowboys game? That you're so invested in? Fuck you talking about, dude. So
it's also weird to imagine Caleb watching sports. It's like when Trump says that he watches sports. It's like, right. Do you though?
Yeah.
Could you? I can't fathom you, unlike either just like appreciating and like what an athlete's doing without being like, I could do that better.
I know. I was thinking the same thing. Yeah. He's like, you know, I could have been in the NBA. I could have been quarterback for the Dolphins. I could have been on that. Yeah. Yeah.
Dan Marino. Totally. Everybody tells me I'm better than him. Everybody says it.
I love the idea of Caleb Nickel with like his shirt off and like full body paint and like a big foam finger and like a beer helmet, you know, like just like
charge.
Just go, yeah. Just like fucking being his stoic ass self. But just plopping him. Yeah. But honestly, like, I think it's coming up. It's like one of the Caleb moments that I kind of liked. Not this one, though, because Caleb, like, walks in, takes his coat off, and just hands it to Sandy, like, you hang this up.
Yeah. Because Sandy's like, come on in, make yourself at home. And he's like, it is my home.
It's my home after all. Fuck you, dude. So walk into the game room. With Kirsten and Julie. Kirsten tells Julie that Marissa's with Ryan, and she says hi to Jimmy and kind of like scoffs when Rachel introduces herself to Julie.
Well, no, because I don't know if Julie knew that Jimmy was going to be one, that he was going to be over at the Coens, because yes. She goes, Jimmy.
Oh, you're here.
But I think it was also the fact that he was sitting on a couch with
another woman.
A woman.
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, she goes, Jimmy. And he goes, Julie. And this is when Rachel could have said, I'm Rachel. But she just went, Rachel.
Blew it.
Which works better.
Yeah.
But as...
Not for me, though.
Yeah. For Jay and Mitchell's The OC Podcast, we have built this up as a catchphrase. She said it one time, but we want her to be like every time fucking Kramer plows through the door.
Right.
Like,
I'm Rachel. We need to give her a few more margaritas, I guess, before she gets there.
Oh, those are coming.
So, yeah, Julie's not like cool with Rachel because she's jealous, even though she's with Caleb and that's her ex-husband, whatever. Caleb, this is the moment I like, where Caleb just like walks up and like sits down in a chair and is just like, what's up, what's the score? Like, he's just like, doesn't give a fuck, because like he's so casual about it, but like
he does the thing that I don't think I've ever done. It yeah. takes a certain personality where, like, if you walk into a room with people and you know their names, you go like, hey, Mitchell, or like,
yeah.
Hey, Jimmy.
Hey,
hi, Rachel.
Yeah.
Happy Thanksgiving. He goes, Jimmy, Rachel. And he sits down and then he goes, what's the score?
It's like he's on a conference call or something. Like, all business. But it's like, it's just like, it kind of blows my mind that's like, he has like completely tarnished his relationship with these people. Like any semblance of a good relationship that he might have, like obviously like he and Rachel are at odds because they're in like a legal battle together. And, you know, he's having an affair with Jimmy's like recent ex-wife that like he thought he was going to get back together with. And like,
are they divorced? Did they paperwork all get filed?
I don't know if I think it's finalized at this point, but still unclear. And Kirsten's all but like disowned him. And he just like comes and like fucking like makes himself at home. And he's just like, what's the score? Let's watch the game. He's just like completely ignoring like what a villain he is in the eyes of these people.
Yeah.
And I just kind of.
So 2003. Cowboys, Dolphins, he would have been like, how's Tony Romo doing?
Yeah. My favorite football player, Tony Romo.
Has he been throwing spiral touchdown passes.
To the end zone to score a touchdown. So, yeah. But he's just, like, so, like, nonchalant about it. I kind of loved it. I kind of loved the way he behaved in the scene. So, Sandy and Kirsten just kind of look at each other. Oh boy, we're in for it now. Kirsten.
So, do you remember, like, 20 seconds ago where they were clinking glasses and smiling? Like, it's so perfect the way that, like, it just crumbles in moment, in like seconds, because fucking Julie and Caleb,
uninvited, like, guests, baby,
walk in and everywhere they step dies and like turns gray.
The flowers wilt and shrivel.
So it was like, anybody got a light? And Caleb's like, right here. Just like lights it with his thumb because he's the devil.
Kirsten like downs her glass of wine, which is of note, because that's going to come back later. So then we cut back over to Chino with Ryan and Marissa. Ryan, they approach a house. Ryan knocks on the door. A beautiful girl answers the door. This is Teresa. Ryan's looking for her brother, Arturo. Teresa's like, where have you been for 5 months? Which is fair.
Ryan, I was trying to figure this all out, because Ryan is clearly like surprised that she answered the door, but
wasn't,
she says,
expecting,
like,
her, yeah,
she goes like, were you looking for my dumb brother or something like that?
Yeah,
which, yes, he was.
Yes,
but like, it's Thanksgiving.
It's Wouldn't Thanksgiving. Where the fuck else, like, is she gonna be? Yeah, good
you
point.
Can't be too surprised.
Yeah, good point, man. Yeah. Anyway, so I think it was just maybe caught off guard, because Marissa was there, and this is his old girlfriend. Marissa introduces herself, and yeah, Marissa and Teresa put it together fairly quickly that Marissa's the new girlfriend, Teresa's the old girlfriend. They're both the girl next door, literally. Ryan feels like intensely awkward in this moment, and Teresa's like, she kind of breaks the ice. She's just kind of like, oh, yeah, Arturo's here. Come on in. So then we dip to commercial. We come back, and we're still in Teresa's house with Ryan, Marissa, and Teresa. Marissa, I like, the whole time Marissa's in Chino, she's, like, walking around with this big smile on her face. And I, like, couldn't figure out, like, what she's trying to convey with that smile. Is it, like, to show how cool she is with poor people, or is it like because she's uncomfortable and she's just kind of like, haha, this is awkward? Like, it's unclear to me. Why do you think Marissa had a big dumb smile on her face the whole time?
I think it's because the Misha Barton couldn't decide how her character would feel being there, and so she went with a big smile. But I think she, like, it does kind of feel like she's connecting with Teresa and Teresa's mom. Talk about, like, when like the musical gets brought up and everything.
Oh,
like,
yeah, I love that stuff.
It is this thing too of, like, yeah, of, you know, if you're, there is that, like, you were born into money and you've lived in this, like, huge fucking mansion filled neighborhood your whole life, and now you're like, oh, this is different. This is how this part of society
most
lives.
People.
And look at me. I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm a part of it.
Look how
now.
Cool I am with this.
Like, so worldly.
Like, your house is like one story, and like, you don't have a dining room, but like, it's cool. Like, I'm cool.
Yeah, totally fine.
Yeah,
it's, oh, these are nice. Where did you get these chairs? Oh, they aren't imported.
They're so
cute.
Oh,
that's cool. They look like it, I guess.
They're so cute. I think it's
Where's your bigger TV? Oh, you don't have. Oh, this is it.
This is it. Huh.
It's kind of vintage. I like it.
Yeah,
I like
it's cool.
It.
I love it. I think it might also be like, you know, she kind of invited herself along this journey with Ryan. And so maybe it's her way of just being like, hey, look, everything's cool. I'm cool with this. Everything's fine. Look how happy I am. I don't know.
She's freaking out on the inside.
It was so off-putting to me. Yeah, like her whole demeanor. Anyway, Teresa's mom greets Ryan with a big hug and asks about his mom, which, you know, he's like, I don't know where my mom is. And Teresa's mom seems great. She seems like an awesome, like, sweet, down-to-earth mom.
Yeah.
Arturo enters. Teresa mentions that Marissa is Ryan's girlfriend. Arturo does not care at all about that information. He literally ignores that information. And he's just like, hey, the car's out back. Let's go.
Arturo, OC MVP nomination. Oh,
yeah. Doesn't give a fuck.
He's all business, yeah. Even on Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So Marissa says that she's going to stay with the ladies while they go check out the car. The mom's like, oh, she can help cook. And Teresa's like, she probably doesn't cook, mom. She has maids for that. And I'm like, how do you know how rich Marissa is? Like, she's like, Ryan, where have you been for 5 months? Like, how do you know? Like, how do you know? I guess maybe you saw the Range Rover and put two and two together, but I don't know.
Marissa has a nice bag. I'm assuming it's
she probably has like some a Chanel kind of or
Prada or
yeah,
you know, name brand.
Probably.
So everybody in this scene is aware of like what's going on. Like, also, what is going on exactly? Why
Great
does
question.
Arturo have this car? Did he steal that car and he's like keeping it for in case one of his friends gets in trouble and needs, like,
I
what happened?
Don't know. It seems like the car was maybe attained legally, because it's like sitting in the driveway, it's covered up. I'm guessing like they had to do a little bit of work on it to get it running so they could
get it to the nice car.
It's a beautiful, yeah, like old convertible. Yes, that remains unclear. I'm guessing though that the car maybe at some point Trey had the car and he was like, hey Arturo, I'm going to prison. Can you like look after this car for me in the meantime? Like, and Arturo's a good guy. He's an MVP. So he's like, sure, man. Yeah, we got room in our driveway. I'll just like plop it right here and just let me know what you want to do with it. I honestly don't know though. But the car,
like I rewatched the episode today again, just to make sure I was familiar with it, and it does a really good job of just flowing.
Yeah.
So that like this is like the third or fourth time I've seen this scene. It was the first time I was like, wait a minute. So what's happening?
Where'd that car come from? And why do we have to take it to a chop shop? Why can't we just sell it, you know?
Yeah, it seems really nice. You could probably just sell it on like eBay Motors or something,
right?
And get some money for it.
You take a car to a chop shop when you've stolen it and you can't sell it.
Yeah.
You chop it up, you break it down for parts and you sell the parts, and you know, you don't get as much as the car, but you get something. Anyway, I don't know. I do not know. It's never made clear. Anyway, let's go back to the Cohen's house. We're in the game room. Caleb, Julie, Jimmy, and Rachel are all sitting there watching the game. Jimmy and Julie are like arguing over who lost Marissa, who was responsible for her. And Rachel tries to bring attention back to the game. But Julie is just like staring daggers at her. Julie just hates her. And Rachel's just like, I'm just trying to make the peace here. I'm just trying to make us a decent Thanksgiving. But you guys showed up and brought your bad fucking attitude into this house. Like, everybody was getting along. And you just brought a trail of stink into this house that is going to ruin Thanksgiving. Anyway.
She's like, I thought this was just going to be me, my coworker, his wife, and their family.
I thought it was going to be me, my coworker, who I'm in love with, his wife, and a white-collar criminal that they're trying to have me date. Like a normal Thanksgiving. So
go Cowboys!
Go Cowboys. So we cut over to the Cohen's kitchen with Sandy and Kirsten, and they both agree that like Caleb and Julie gotta go. Caleb enters, and he kind of like starts to apologize to Kirsten for like crashing Thanksgiving. And Kirsten's like, I don't want to hear it. I'm done with you, Dad. She bails. Caleb starts to follow her, but Anna kind of intercepts. And she starts grilling Caleb about the wetlands, the Balboa Heights.
Yes.
And Sandy is there, like, backing her up. She's like, Sandy, do you realize you're displacing
this girl anymore?
Seriously, man. Like, Sandy is like, look out, Seth, because Sandy might want to marry her.
He's like, yes, a fucking young liberal to attack this old rich white man.
And she's like, not afraid of
him. They're like, yeah, we'll flank him.
Flank him. Just barrage him. So then the doorbell rings yet again, and this time Seth's got it, because whoever needs to answer the door answers the door in this episode.
I'll get it. Wait a minute.
Wait, I think that one's for me. Yeah. Who could it be? I don't know. I just feel like I need to go answer it. And who is it but Summer Roberts?
Summer.
Oh, boy. Seth's in a predicament now. So apparently Summer was supposed to have Thanksgiving with Marissa and Julie and Caleb, but nobody's at that house. And so she came over here to be like, hey, are they over here? And Seth answered the door, Summer's like, hey, we should talk about like what didn't happen on the yacht. And Seth like reluctantly agrees. Summer wants to come inside, but Seth's like, oh shit, Anna's here, and I can't. This is just Seth digging himself into a hole. It's fun TV, yeah, but it's like a really dumb move on his part. So Seth's like, why don't you go to the pool house, go around the house, because we just got some new gardenias or whatever the fuck. He's making some bullshit. And go to the pool house, and I'll meet you in the pool house. And so Summer's just kind of like, okay.
I like the way that they did this, because basically they pair every two characters off, and then there's a third person at this point that like comes in, yeah, and like interferes. So you have like, you got Jimmy and Rachel. They were getting along well, talking about ESPN Classic, and then Julie comes in.
Yeah.
And is like, where's our daughter? What are you doing being happy on Thanksgiving?
Who's this whore you're talking to? Yeah.
Yeah. And then you have Sandy and Kirsten are like feeling really good about what's going on with their Thanksgiving, that with the people they invited. And then Caleb comes in, yep, and just fucks it up. You got Ryan and Marissa, who you think like, oh, things are going well. And then you're introduced to Teresa. And you're like, whoa,
the old girlfriend.
Who's this? Old girlfriend, new girlfriend. Oh boy. And then, you know, Anna and Seth were getting along really well. Seth was kind of starting to come around to the idea, but then he can't because Summer showed up.
He's weak to her powers.
They really, and then yeah, they just like every character. Now there's a weird triangle with all these characters.
This is where this episode gets fun. I mean, it's always been fun, but now it gets like dramatic, I guess. So
yes,
yeah. So we go to the pool house with Seth and Summer, and Summer just like jumps Seth, starts making out with him. She can't help herself. But she still doesn't want anybody to know that she likes him. And
look, man, he's wearing that fucking Argyle sweater.
He's looking good.
I'd pounce on him too. Come on.
Seth makes like a half-assed excuse to like go check on his beans or whatever. But he can't help himself. He's like, fuck, yeah, I've been in love with this girl since I was a child. Like, okay, let's make out. And I'm wondering, like, did Seth do like a voodoo spell to Summer or something? Because she couldn't have been less interested in him. Like, think about like when the show started, and she like couldn't even remember his name. She thought he was a dork. Like, didn't want anything to do with him. Like, all of a sudden, she's just like powerless to Seth.
I think she just finally noticed him. You know, like. She really didn't for the whole however many years that they, I guess 16 years up until now.
But it's also just like the fact that it's his dream girl and his dreams are coming true. I don't know. It just seems a little too convenient for Seth.
Yeah, and we can talk about this now or in a little while after more of the scenes have developed. Yeah. But it's like from this point, now it's like a Mrs. Doubtfire thing where Seth 100%. Is like,
I wrote Mrs. Doubtfire all over this. Because yeah, he's having to bounce between Summer and Anna the whole time, not letting either person know that the other person is like in the house.
Right.
And so he's coming up with excuses.
I don't like it at all because I don't like Seth coming off looking like a dirtbag, which he's going back and forth making out with these two girls unbeknownst to either of them.
Yeah, it's so fucking...
And also, they make both of them look kind of like dumb.
Yeah, like you wait here and I'll be back, and it's like comes
like,
back.
I gotta
like,
go check on Beans, but you know how Beans are, and she's like, yeah,
Beans, whatever. I'll play Jenga with your horse. Yeah, it's kind of weak, but I mean, I get they were trying to do the Mrs. Doubtfire thing, but and this whole love triangle thing plays out way longer than it has any business playing out,
right?
As we'll see in future episodes.
And he doesn't dress up like a woman, like an old nanny.
Yeah, he doesn't have to go into the bathroom and put a wig on every time he goes to see Anna. So, not fun. So, we go over to Teresa's house. Now we're back in Chino. And we're in the kitchen with Marissa and Mom. And Marissa notices a pic of like Ryan as Snoopy in a school play. And
few things that I need to bring up. There are multiple pictures of Ryan on this family's refrigerator.
I mean, he grew up with this family, you know? Like, think about like when I was growing up, when I was a kid, like our neighborhood was super tight. And I would like hang out with the neighborhood kids all the time. Sometimes I would like go over to their houses. Just like
put pictures of you on their fridge.
Probably, yeah. I was probably on their fridge because, like, we hung out all the time, like every day.
Okay, all right. So I'll let that pass.
I don't think. I'm just saying, like, in tight knit community or neighborhoods and stuff like that. I don't think it's that uncommon. Just because, yeah, you're like all the families are like one big family. It kind of feels like that. I don't know.
I gotcha.
Yeah,
I'm just trying. Yeah, I guess I had all of like my friends growing up never made it to the fridge.
Fridge.
I guess
is a
I should have had
spot.
Better friends. I guess.
Or maybe you but, just your parents were just like they never made it on your fridge. Is that what you're saying? Right. Or you never made it on theirs? Or both?
I don't know if I made it on theirs. I don't even shit. Maybe I've been doing it wrong this whole time.
Maybe your parents were just like way, way more into like pictures of you and your sister. they cut the other kids out of the pictures and they're like, no, just my baby boy. That's all I want to see.
Just by himself. Yeah. Okay. The other thing, and this one I have a stronger question towards. So it's brought up that Ryan played Snoopy
right
in an eighth grade musical.
Right.
Does Snoopy sing?
Great question. apparently it's like a musical that's done in schools, I guess. like Annie or something. But that is a good question because in the show
he doesn't. He's like mute.
He never speaks.
Like he doesn't make noise.
Never makes a noise. In the comic strip, doesn't talk. Yeah, maybe he just. Maybe he was a good dancer. I could see Ryan
in
being
a, way,
a good dancer.
That's a great role for Ryan because he's better when he's not talking.
Yeah. He speaks. His actions speak louder than words. But yeah, so
my
Ryan,
favorite part of the musical is when Snoopy punches Pigpen.
Yeah, punches him out and says, "Welcome to the OC, bitch. Welcome to the
just fucking dirt and Pigpen stench goes everywhere.
Welcome to Peanuts, bitch." Yeah, so yeah, we see that Ryan was in a musical. Teresa's mom said, like, oh, he was so talented. Then Teresa enters and says, like, he quit, you know, doing musicals, I guess, doing theater when he got to high school because he's a bad boy. And Marissa sees another pic of Ryan and Teresa at like a school dance last year. And Teresa was like, yeah, he was here one day and then the next day he was gone. And he just like vanished without a trace, no call, nothing. And they fucking grew up together. And like I get it. Like Ryan got swept up in that OC, like we were saying at the beginning of the episode, like, and we did too. And like, this is like that moment where you realize like, oh yeah, he has like a whole life. He had a whole life before the Coens. Mm-hmm. And he had people that loved him and cared about him and that he grew up with. And yeah, he just kind of like bailed on them without any sort of like closure.
Yeah, didn't call was the thing that I was like, because it really like, he kind of had to go with the, like when he went back to his house, it was empty.
Yeah.
Like his mom had left. And so Sandy was like, come on, you're coming with us. And then so, and we all know how that worked out. If you don't, go back and listen to the first 10 episodes of this show, this podcast. But yeah, when she's like, he didn't call or anything, I was like, oh yeah, Ryan.
Bad move. And then it does a really good cut where it's like a close up of the picture of like Ryan and Teresa at like the dance, and then it like cuts to Ryan like in the driveway with Arturo working on the car. It's just like, you see the progression. It's good. Kind of Schwartzen a little.
Bit of a Schwartz.
So yeah, I agree. That's a kind of a dick move on Ryan's part. So yeah, we're in the driveway with Ryan and Arturo. Arturo reveals like the beautiful old convertible. Arturo doesn't get why Ryan's like doing this favor for Trey. He's like, I don't know why you're doing this, man. You got a good life. Like, you could just go back to that new life that you have. Forget about Trey. Like, what's he going to do? He's in prison. But Ryan.
Arturo does say, Trey is my best friend.
Yeah. But he also says,
he's trouble. I don't know why you're doing this.
Yeah. Yeah. But Ryan's remaining loyal to his brother. I think he sees that he's in like imminent danger and he's just like, I got to do this or else my brother's going to fucking get killed in prison and then I'm not going to be able to live with myself, which I get. So then we cut back to the Coens game room with Jimmy, Julie, Caleb, and Rachel. They are all crammed on a couch together. Like, I don't, there are other chairs in the room and yet they are all fucking smushed.
I wrote those exact words. Crammed together on a couch.
It's so funny looking.
And none of them are saying anything. Yep, they're all just sitting there with glasses and like angry at each other, which means like Caleb got up.
Yeah, he was sitting in the chair. Got up to get a glass of wine or something.
When he got up and then he got like yelled at by Anna and Sandy, and then it was like, fuck this, I'm going back to the den to watch the football game.
Like,
and then
over.
He decided, move over.
Yeah.
I'm sitting on the couch.
Let's sit here. Get a better view of the TV.
It's really great that they're all just wedged together in this on that couch.
I love it. Yeah, and they all look so miserable. So we like pan over to Kirsten and Sandy in the kitchen. And Kirsten's knocking him back, man. And Sandy's like, hey, you know, you haven't eaten. Maybe you should slow down. And Kirsten gets
We should address this now. Like, in this episode, her drinking too much is used as, like, fun, like, comedy.
It's funny, yeah.
She does have to go to rehab, like, in, I think, season 2?
Yeah. In hindsight being what it is, it's like, this is kind of telling. This is kind of like a forewarning.
And it's kind of a, knowing that and like rewatching is kind of a bummer that they're like, I think even, and this is fast forwarding to like the last scene of the one of the last scenes of this episode is like she's passed out in bed and Sandy's like eating Chinese food and he looks over and like smiles.
Yeah.
Like, ah.
It's played for laughs, like her alcoholism. And I'm just like, oh, this is, you're like enabling this behavior. You're like, cool. You're not just cool with this behavior, you're like encouraging it because you're like, oh, it's fun, it's funny. Yeah. But yeah, I see it as a big problem also. But so yeah, she's knocking him back and she's getting like real snippy with Sandy. She's like, don't tell me when I've had too much. Don't tell me what to do. My dad's making me want to drink more and I'm going to drink more.
She goes, you need to tell him to hit the bricks. And then Sandy goes, hit the bricks? Who talks like that?
Drunk Kirsten, that's who.
My friend, if you will remember on the drive to Tijuana.
Oh my gosh.
When Summer says 80 is the new 60.
Yeah.
And Seth goes, who talks like that?
Wow. What a callback.
Callback!
Fucking mark it.
Mark it!
And that's what they call a callback in comedy, Ron.
Hot dog. That's a good one.
Like father, like son.
I'm impressed. Yes. Hell yes. Okay, cool. So, yeah. Her alcoholism's played as cute, but it's not cute. Anna's in the kitchen the whole time, and she's just kind of that's kind of a funny reveal.
Because Seth comes in from the pool house, and Anna comes around the corner from the kitchen. So it's just like, she's just been there the whole time that Sandy and Kirsten have been talking.
He's like, honey, I think you're drinking too much. And Anna's like, oh, shit. She's like, do you guys want some privacy? And Kirsten just like storms off. Anna exits. Sandy's kind of left like confused, just kind of like, oh, what's going on?
I hate Thanksgiving.
Then I guess it's later. We're still like, we cut to the kitchen, but it's, you know, the same kitchen. But it's later, I guess, and it's we're with Seth. He enters from his makeout sesh, from the pool house with Summer. And Anna's like, hey, where have you been? And Seth makes up some bullshit about like feeding Ryan sea monkeys. Anna, of course, is like, hey, I want to see the sea monkeys. But Seth says, they've all committed suicide. Which is like a fucked up thing to say. Why couldn't you just say like, oh, I went to feed them and they were all dead because they're sea monkeys. Like,
this is another thing I don't like about this. I don't really like Seth in this episode.
Me neither. No.
I do in like bits, but overall, like, I think everything that he says when he's like trying to cover up this whole love triangle thing he's got going on, I don't think it's very funny.
Yeah.
And also, again, like, it makes Anna be like, I want to see the sea monkeys.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Okay, well, you're 16, so just calm down.
Calm down. They're just like plankton that float around.
Yeah, and I don't, like, I'm not saying, like, that the writing needed to be better for Seth, but it was just like, yeah, whenever he was like, I gotta do this, and you stay here and play Jenga with Captain Oates. It's like,
for as smart as Anna is, it's like she should be able to pick up on this line of bullshit that Seth is throwing at her. Yeah,
it wasn't great. I liked all the storylines in this episode more than this one.
I agree. Yeah. So, Anna wants to go to the pool house to like make out, and Seth's like, well, hey, how about we just go to my room?
So like, I already have a girl in there that I'm making out with. Yeah. So we have to go to my room.
Also, it's like, that's Ryan's room. Like, why do you want to go to Ryan's room to make out? Like, you have your own bedroom. And Anna, I would think Anna would want to see it. Like, I want to see like what posters you got up and all that. So then we cut to Seth's room with Anna and Seth. And Anna, and now Anna jumps him. Like, they can't resist themselves. Because
Argyle sweater, dude.
I'm telling you, Argyle sweater, untucked, button-up shirt underneath.
You got a little bit of that shirt tail hanging out?
Oh, big-time shirt tail hanging out. So he's full on pulling a Mrs. Doubtfire now. They start making out, and he's like using the food that he's cooking as an excuse to go see the other girl. So Seth like ducks out of this situation with Anna. He calls Ryan on, I guess, Sandy's cell phone. And then we cut over to Teresa's house in the kitchen with Ryan, Marissa, Mom, and Teresa. Ryan answers the cell. Seth's like, hey, I got a real two-girl situation over here. And Ryan's like, hey, me too. And Ryan,
I did like that, because I was like, oh yeah, you both do.
You're both in over your heads now. Ryan mentions that, you know, like Marissa is with him. And Seth mentions that Julie is looking for Marissa. And so now Ryan has this information like, I thought Marissa got permission to come with me. Now Julie's going to be pissed because like Marissa just like ran off with me without telling her, and whole situation coming up now. So
yeah,
we got
already
back.
Julie Cooper already hates Ryan.
Yeah. So
this is not helping.
Not a good look. Yeah. So then we cut over to the Cohen's kitchen with Kirsten, and she's straight fucking blending margaritas.
The traditional Thanksgiving beverage.
I wrote for Thanksgiving. Margaritas. You know, like you do.
Whenever you see the like cornucopia of like a traditional Thanksgiving table set, it's like pumpkins and turkey and potatoes and yams and margarita, just kind of spilling on the table.
A little salt around the rim, a little lime in there. Pairs perfectly with all Thanksgiving cuisine. So
she needed to be making something in a blender,
right,
in order for a really funny thing to happen.
So Seth approaches and tells her, he's like yelling at her because the blender's really loud. He's like, Marissa's in Chino. She's like, what? And then she stops the blender as Seth is saying, I said Marissa's in Chino, for the whole house to hear. And then Seth says, wow, that happens in real life.
This is what Adam Brody is, my dude, because he delivered that so good. He was like, Marissa's in Chino. Wow, that really happens in real life. Like, that was great.
He's good.
All right, I like Seth again.
Adam Brody's good.
Back to not liking him.
Yeah, but Seth's kind of a dingus a lot of the time.
But again, kind of a meta thing that he's like acknowledging
real
stuff that you would see. In,
is it real life, Seth? and then like everybody walks in after they hear him say that, and Julie's like, what? And Seth's like, I said Marissa has my chinos. I love those pants. Good ad lib. Kirsten, drunk off her ass, spins around and says like, does anybody want some fresh marks? And you're just like, oh boy.
Which Rachel was like, I'm Rachel.
I'm Rachel. You know I like the margaritas. So then we cut over to Teresa's house. We're at the front door with Teresa, Ryan, and Marissa. Ryan does apologize to Teresa, but it's really just him going, I'm sorry. Like, it's not... It seems genuine, but it's also like, you could have said a few more words there, Ryan.
But if Teresa grew up with Ryan, she knows.
She's like...
That's as good as he can do.
As good as it's going to get. So then Teresa goes inside. Ryan and Marissa are like going to the car. And Ryan's like pissed at Marissa now for lying to him, saying that Julie said it was cool that she go with him when she didn't. And he gives her the keys to the range. And he's like, I'll take a bus back. Like, I'm putting my foot down here. Go home. Like, get out of here. And Marissa's like, nobody tells me no. And she gets in the car and she drives off. Then we cut to commercial. And then we come back.
He fucking Harry and the Hendersons her.
Yeah, he's like, get out of here. He starts throwing rocks at her.
Just go.
Just go. We don't want you here no more.
Which he's done before.
Which he's done. It's how he gets rid of people. It's how he gets rid of Marissa in particular.
It's the only way she'll go.
Yeah. You like literally have to like throw rocks at her. So we come back from commercial and we're at the pool house with Summer and Seth. They're making out on Ryan's bed, which is kind of rude. There's this like fun jazz music playing, which
is
like,
have you ever made out on your friend's bed before with a girl?
I've made out on other people's beds with girls before.
Yeah, like parties.
Yeah, like at a party or something. Houses. You only have to do that, like, you only have to, like, have somebody yell at you once for doing that to know that it's not cool to do that ever again.
Yeah.
But no, like, in the, like, this is a really weird situation. I've never been in a situation like this where it's like, oh, you mean at Thanksgiving and I've got one girl at my surrogate brother's pool house and then another girl in my room and yeah, I'm bouncing back and forth. Oh yeah, I've done that before.
Yeah,
no, it's strange. It's strange to say the least, but I still see it as kind of rude. Like that's Ryan's bed. Like you don't want to like blow a load
yeah
on your bro's bed.
Fucking pissed.
Yeah,
also like it's I don't, again, it's like it's Summer and Anna being like written to be so naive. Like why yeah. isn't Summer like, why are we making out in Ryan's bed and not your bed?
And also why haven't we gone inside yet? And like,
yeah,
it's Thanksgiving, you know, like let's hang out with your family. I don't, it's because they're so enamored with Seth. They just want to make out with him and he's a sex
but
god.
Also Summer is feeling conflicted,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, she also wants to keep her feelings for Seth a secret from everybody.
Yes, I guess that
I don't know,
it's kind of an excuse. It's not great,
not great, but hey, there's this fun jazz music playing whenever Seth's making out with a girl. And
Zoot Riot.
Seth appears to be having the time of his life right now, even though he's being a complete shithead, dirtbag. And I gotta say,
you
man,
think
yeah.
When he, oh, you go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just gonna say, like the chemistry that Adam Brody and Rachel Bilson have is like undeniable. Like they're making out.
They're
like laughing.
They were dating.
They're dating in real life. So there you go. But like, they just like genuinely seem like super into each other in this mm-hmm. in this moment. Yeah. What were you going to say?
I don't remember how long they were dating, but I'm pretty sure it was like for most of the show.
Wow.
I think that they were together. I, as much as I am not a fan of this storyline, I did like when he like stops kissing her for a little while and is just like looking at her and he goes, this is happening.
Yeah.
But I was trying to think, because my first thought, which is what made me think like, oh, that's kind of cute, maybe, is like, this is what he's wanted his whole life. Like yeah. he's been in love with her. But also, if it's not that, and it's like, I got two girls that I'm like switching between.
Yeah, I got a Mrs. Doubtfire going.
Yeah, but ugh. I don't think it was that. It felt like it was the first one.
Yeah, he's like,
I'm making out with Summer Roberts.
I can't
believe
I'm making out with Summer, yeah. But him saying that this is happening kind of like triggers Summer and she like boots him off the bed and she's like, no, this can't be happening. And I'm like, Summer, you were like very willing in this makeout sesh. Like you were very complicit. It was like, you're just like kind of playing him hot and cold right now. It's kind of weird. She wants to go inside and get food. She's like, I'm lightheaded. I want to go get food. Seth insists that she stays. This is like another kind of bullshit moment. And bullshit excuses why she can't go inside. And he says that he'll bring her food. And then he leaves. And I'm just like, oh boy. Oh, geez.
Yeah.
And so then we cut over to the Cohen's kitchen. And it's like all the adults now. And I wrote a line down, and I personally think it's a really good line.
Okay.
So they're all in the kitchen.
I love this scene, by the way.
I do too.
Just all of them yelling at each other.
It's a short scene, and they're all just like yelling at each other. I said, you'd think we're in a parasol factory, the amount of shade that is being thrown here. thank you.
Bravo, sir.
Pat myself on the back of that one. Because it's literally
fucking
vote. It's like fucking hot potato with insults. Like it's just like Julie's gonna rip on Jimmy for being like a shitty dad, and then like Jimmy's gonna fire back at Julie for being a shitty mom, and then and then Caleb's gonna jump in and he's gonna yell at Jimmy and Kirsten, and then Kirsten's gonna fire back
gets
at
in,
Caleb. Yeah.
And then Jimmy says something about like, excuse me for trying to rebound or like trying to get some action or something. And Rachel's like, excuse me? And he's like, I'm sorry. That was out of line. It's very like, it's that like quick OC pace that I really like.
And it's
really also
like,
weird because we're used to that island that they're all around being the breakfast island where everyone's, you know, it's always the Coens are just, you know, being nice to each other around it. And it's just like, now it's different.
Oh, it's very different. A lot of shit goes down in this kitchen island. But yeah, and it's like they're all digging at each other with like stuff that is very relevant and like calling back to like previous episodes and stuff. It's like genuine, like Josh Schwartz knowing these characters, knowing their relationships, knowing their past, knowing everything the audience knows if they're like paying attention, and then just like boom, rapid fire one line after another of just like boom, dig. It's great. It's a short scene, but it's fantastic.
I'm gonna reference this scene at the end of the episode when we're talking about OC MVPs.
Okay. Cool.
So just remember this. Remember that, this is all these characters at this point are so like interwoven, you know?
Yeah. Cool. So
it's great.
It's great.
It's great. It's a good show, you guys.
It's a good show. Watch it. So while all this is going down, Seth runs through on his way to the bedroom, runs from the pool house to the bedroom, and Sandy tries to get him to like get something out of the pool house. But
linens. Seth, you get the linens out of the pool house.
I guess we're having a sleepover now. And then, but like, he's like got some Anna to make out with. So like, he's like, sorry, nope, ignoring you, Dad. And he runs upstairs. So then we go to Seth's room with Seth and Anna, and Seth enters and the fun jazz music is back and he's making out. He's Mrs. Doubtfiring, whatever. I don't want to spend too much time on this because it's literally just back and forth. Gotta go. So make out and then like, I gotta go check on the yams or whatever. Yeah.
But wait.
What?
Because this is important to me.
Okay.
And I'm gonna try to make it important to you.
Okay.
So they're trying, Anna's like, you should take that sweater off, that Argyle sweater. And he's like, okay. And he's like taking it off and he falls.
Yes.
Just like he fell with Summer.
Ooh.
And so, my friend, would we call this not a callback, but a fallback?
Fallback.
Market.
And that's what they call a fallback in comedy, Ron.
I'll allow it.
Okay. That's it. That's all I had for that scene.
No, I like it. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's fun, but it's also just like more of the same. And it's like, I don't want to give too much energy to Seth's bad behavior in this this moment.
Right.
So then,
if it makes you feel any better, he ends up alone in this episode.
That's true, as he deserves. Yeah.
Yes.
Justice comes for him. So then we go to the pool house with Summer, and she's like exiting the bathroom. She hears a noise from like the kitchenette. And she's like, back so soon? And then we reveal that it's Sandy who's in the pool house. And Summer like freaks out. And she's just like, ew, well, not ew. I mean, you're very attractive for a dad.
Her reaction, her like default reaction to things is ew.
Ew. But then she has to make it clear that like Peter Gallagher is an attractive man for a dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's like, ew. Well, not ew, but I'm just, you know. You're a dad, a nice dad. Okay.
I gotta go.
And then she runs back to the bathroom, and Sandy's just like, I love that Peter Gallagher has so many opportunities to just like be bewildered in this episode, where he's just standing there like, what the hell just happened?
We also, there's not many scenes up until this one that Sandy's in where he doesn't talk.
Mm-hmm.
The dude loves to talk. And he like doesn't say a word in this scene.
He's kind of speechless.
Like, surprised to see Summer in Ryan's bathroom.
What are you doing here?
No idea what's going on. Holding like tablecloths. And right. He's just like, speechless. Yep. Yeah, it's great.
So then we cut over to the chop shop with Ryan. He pulls up in the whip. A man with a gold chain comes out and compliments the car and insults Ryan's brother. And Ryan's just like, I'm going to let that slide, whatever. Are we good? And then the dude's like, you got to pay interest because this is America. And a few of his goons come out from like the garage. And they just start like wailing on Ryan.
You know what makes me sad?
What?
That's what these guys are doing on Thanksgiving.
Oh, you're right. They're just hanging out at the chop shop.
They're going to beat this kid up.
How'd you spend your Thanksgiving? Well, beat up this kid who dropped a car off.
Because I got a signal from our leader, I guess.
Whatever.
I don't ask questions. I just follow orders.
I just like to punch people. So Ryan's getting beat up. And then like in the street, you see like the range pull up. It's Marissa. And she like honks the horn. Ryan runs, jumps in. They speed off. Ryan's like, what are you doing here? Marissa's like, I followed you. And Ryan's like, good idea, actually. They're a regular Bonnie and Clyde now, just like running away.
Can I just say that I love that you keep referring to it as the range?
The range, baby.
She pulls up in the range.
Pull up in the range. Hell yeah. If I had one, I'd call it that too.
Hell yeah.
Hey, everybody, get in the range.
Hop in the range. I'm driving.
I'm driving. We're going
to
the beach.
Who wants frozen yogurt?
Living that hard life. So we cut over to the Cohen's house, and literally everybody is arguing in the kitchen still. Seth and Sandy are talking in the den. So it's like everybody else arguing. Seth and Sandy are in the den. Because Sandy, he put two and two together. He knows what's going on. He's like, I get it. You're in a tough situation, but you can't lead them on like this. You got to choose one. And Seth can't decide. And Sandy's like, something is burning. And so they run into the kitchen. And Rachel is trying to point out, like, because she's the only one who's sober, I guess, and not filled with rage. She's like trying to point out, hey, the oven's on fire. And they make a mad dash to like get the turkey out of the oven. Did you hear like what is said off screen while they're like pulling the turkey out of the oven? I couldn't for the life of me figure out who said this line. It was a male voice.
I just heard Kirsten go like, oh no, the turkey.
It had to have either. Yeah, it was definitely like ADR in later. And it's just, yeah, it's just commotion. But like, I was listening to it on headphones and it like came in clear as day, like way louder than all the other voices. And it had to have either been Sandy or Jimmy, but I want to make sure I get this right.
Or Caleb.
It wasn't Caleb because of the way it was said. It was said exactly like it was like, oh, that's a toasty bird. Like, I swear to God, dude, I like rewound it like a few times, and I was like, did I just hear that? And then every time I heard it, I laughed harder because it was just like the funniest
thing. This episode should be called The Toasty Bird.
It sounded like fucking Otto from The Simpsons came in, like popped his head in and was just like, oh, that's a toasty bird. Like, it was just like that level of like comical. And it's just like, I couldn't figure out who said it. Like, I couldn't figure out like which actor ad-libbed that line. But
I gotta, so I gotta go good. Back and listen to this now.
So good. Anyway, Anna comes down because, you know, the house is on fire. Summer enters, like, did I hear the smoke detectors going off? Did I hear the fire alarm going off? And they see each other and they're like, uh-oh. Summer, Anna? And then they both go, Seth. Like, it was good. It's good TV.
It was very sitcom-y.
Very like, sitcom-y, yeah.
I it worked really well, though. I liked it.
And they're both like, I kissed you. Ah. And then this is another, like, Caleb moment. Caleb. Yeah, where he just fucking laughs. He's just like...
He laughs like a villain.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's, you know, because you wonder, what makes him laugh?
Right.
Oh.
Like, other's misfortune.
Being promiscuous.
Yeah. The apple doesn't fall far,
you.
Does it?
I kissed you.
But I just like, he's just like so tickled by it. And it's just like, such. He's such a shithead, but he's just like really leaning into it. And I just liked it. I was and maybe it's also because I was kind of like, yeah, fuck you, Seth. Like, I was just kind of like, you deserve this, like, you deserve to get right. called out and this and yeah, Caleb's laugh, just like, I don't know, I really enjoyed it. Anyway, Kirsten says, God, like, she's drunk, so it's like, I guess, kind of excusable, but she's like, I always knew you were a late bloomer, sweetie. It's like a very bizarre thing to say.
I don't know, like, it feels, again, because this character goes to rehab, but I think Kelly Rowan does a pretty good job of like acting like a drunk mom on Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
like,
she nailed it.
Yeah,
and she says that and says like, thank you, mom. And then he's like, the whole time he's trying to like manage this chaos.
Yeah,
so Anna leaves, then Summer leaves, and then Seth kind of chases after them. Kirsten doesn't feel well, so she leaves, you know, because she's drunk as fuck. And then the turkey's fucked. Like, Thanksgiving's ruined, guys. We blew it. So then
somebody says where the get the takeout menus or something.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course. That's what we do. That's what we do in the Coens household. Just get takeout. So then we cut over to the prison yard. And we're with Ryan, Trey, and Marissa. And the song Orange Sky by Alexi Murdoch is playing. Great song. Beautiful song.
I really liked this song. I made a note of it so that I will like see if I like any of this guy's other songs. But yeah I liked this one.
It's kind of singer-songwriter-y, like acoustic guitar vocal song, but fits yeah, really
he's
well.
Not, he's not reinventing the wheel by any means, but it fits so well with this.
Oh.
I think it even says like something about my brother or something.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like, oh, this really works.
Playing perfectly. Another great music choice from the OC. So Ryan's there. He's telling Trey like, it's done. The debt is paid. Trey thanks Ryan, saying like, no one else would have done that for him. Which, judging from how Arturo was talking about Trey, like, yeah, you're probably right. That's your best friend. Ryan, like, kind of half-heartedly says that he'll come back. And then Trey's kind of like, nah, you don't have to. Like, you got a good thing going. You got people waiting for you. Like, that made me feel, like, so sad for Trey. And it was, like, a very, like, sweet moment. And it's like, I know, like, Trey's, like, really stupid and he's like landed himself in jail and he's young and he's like a shithead, but like they gave him this moment where he like has a real heart and he's like really empathetic, and it was just really sweet when he was just like, you got people waiting for you, go on, get out of here. Like, I don't know, that part really got to me. And so they get one last bro hug in, and then Ryan,
you see that those kids are still sitting at that picnic table.
Yeah, they're just like
sitting the wrong way.
When's our parents gonna pick us up?
We've been here for 4 days.
Yeah, like, you shouldn't just let kids run around a jail like that. So then Ryan and Marissa leave, and then we cut over to the car with Ryan and Marissa. And this is our, I feel like we need a drop for like all the art shot in the episode, because they all have one. And yep. This is the art shot in this episode. You're kind of seeing POV from the car, like the streets of Chino. You know, they're driving through neighborhoods. They're driving through kind of like the more industrial part. Like, yeah.
I loved this whole month. The whole time this song was playing.
Yeah.
Really loved it.
Oh, yeah. This sequence is great.
It's really great.
Great way to, it's like it's wrapping everything up. So they're in the car. We cut over to Marissa and she's like, you know, I guess I never realized that you left people behind. And I'm like, really? You think he just fucking appeared out of thin air?
Which, to be fair, we have already said on this episode, we kind of forgot.
We kind of all, yeah, we all did that. But I like that they're like bringing that to the audience's attention here. And Ryan says, you know, like, he never wants to do that again. And Marissa's like, you'll never have to, Snoopy. Ended on like a little fun note.
And then Ryan starts singing that Snoopy song that everybody knows and loves.
That has to be in the musical, right? Like the muted trombone that's like when the adults talk. That has to be in there.
If it's a good Peanuts musical.
Right?
I'm gonna say something that I've never said on a podcast before.
Okay.
Not a huge fan of the Peanuts. They never did anything for me.
Dude, honestly, me neither. Like, I don't get it. I don't get it.
Charlie Brown is a bummer, and I know I've heard that like Charles Schulz was notorious, like he was depressed.
Oh.
And which is kind of a bummer to know that he like made a comic that had a depressing character.
Yeah.
I just never the Lucy's, I think that was her name. Mm-hmm. The like therapist is in what, like,
yeah.
Even the like Christmas special, it's never been, I don't know. I know people, there are some people that like it, and that's great.
I think it's boring.
Yeah.
I have a hard time with it. But I mean, they're iconic. I feel like they're more like they're so recognizable, and yet I can't tell you, aside from good grief, like another line that Charlie Brown says. Like, yeah, it's interesting. Anyway, we cut away from Snoopy. We're back at the Cohen's house. Yeah, this is where like we're getting that final montage. Kirsten's passed out in the bed. Sandy's eating Chinese food next to her. He chuckles at her alcoholism. Rachel and Jimmy are eating Chinese food as the game winds down, and Rachel suggests, hey, maybe, you know, we could watch a game together sometime. And Jimmy,
I would assume this might be, because usually there's like two games.
Yeah.
On Thanksgiving. This has to be the second game. Football games are not this long.
Yeah, like, but it's not.
A whole day has passed.
A whole day has passed, true. And I guess it's nighttime now. Yeah, I guess. And it's the West Coast. They're on West Coast. So, yeah, that was probably the last game.
Yeah.
And then Jimmy does his classic, like, I'm going to stutter for a minute and not really say anything. He's just like, oh, well, you know, sometimes, you know, and then Rachel's just like, when you're ready, we can watch a game together. Sure.
Jimmy's like, you know, yeah, it's a tuck in.
Julie and Caleb are in the kitchen eating Chinese food. Marissa and Ryan
return. Before they walked in, when they cut to the two of them, you do kind of see it, like
that they're
Caleb
like
and Julie are like
into each other.
You know, they're like kind of like cuddling and like eating Chinese food.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Okay, yeah. I haven't even thought about how it works, but yeah. Okay.
Misery loves company, I guess. So, yeah, then Marissa and Ryan return. They enter. Julie starts to do the like mean mom, like where have you been sort of thing. And then Caleb, of all people, shuts Julie down. And he says, come on, it's Thanksgiving.
It's Thanksgiving. It's Thanksgiving. A day of food.
And I gotta say,
in football games.
I gotta say right here in this moment, and I know it's a hot take, but I'm kind of feeling Caleb maybe for the MVP.
Over Arturo? How quickly you forget.
I do.
Okay,
Arturo,
we're
going to
put his names in the running because I did think,
yeah.
Is this like as redeemable as this character gets?
This might be his best
kind of
chance.
Is.
Yeah, it might be his best episode. And then we go up to Seth's room. Seth's laying on the floor with Captain Oates, being all bummed out because he fucked up. Marissa and Ryan walk in with a bunch of Chinese food. And
Ryan gives a hearty, hey, man.
Hey, man. So they start talking. They both realize that neither of them had a really great day. Marissa mentions the Snoopy musical, and we kind of like fade out on all three of our heroes just kind of chatting and eating Chinese food. And they
nail it. There was a thing that got me a little choked up, though. And
What's that?
Was when they're sitting on the floor. It's before the musical talk comes up. And Seth is like, so how is Chino? And Ryan goes, it's good to be home.
Oh, shit. And, you're right.
And just a little bit, I was just like, because it feels like, you know, essentially... The episode's called The Homecoming.
Yeah.
And you would think, oh, it's because he's going back to Chino.
But no.
But really, is it? I mean, it was like closing that chapter.
Yeah.
Like, he said goodbye to his brother.
Yeah.
He said goodbye to, he apologized to Teresa for not letting her know where he'd left or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, it feels like now this is officially, you know.
You're right.
This is where he belongs.
Yeah, that is a good moment. Yeah. Thanks for mentioning that, because I was like, I was kind of thinking, like, this just kind of putters out, like, with them just kind of, like, being kids talking on the floor. But, yeah, that's a nice kind of, like, kind of button on the end of this episode. And the song ends, like, perfectly with the fade out to credits. Like, that song has been going for, like, 2 minutes.
they played the whole song.
The whole song, and they cut it so well. And they just like nailed it right on the ending when we're pulling out on the kids talk and fade to black, boom, credits, end of episode. Who do you got for MVP?
Okay, so I mean, this episode is a tough one to pick because you got, like we said, Arturo comes in, knocks it out of the park.
Arturo's great.
You got, but I also feel like what we did with Chip in the last episode.
Yeah.
I feel like we can't do that back to back.
No.
I think Caleb, somewhat redeemable in that one moment. I still don't know if it like makes up for all the shit that he's done in the last couple episodes.
No, but I'm thinking like just this episode. Like this episode in a vacuum. I kind of liked Caleb. Because he didn't do anything crash the Thanksgiving, I guess.
Yeah. You could say Marissa, you know, came in
Definitely.
And saved Ryan
Swooped
from getting
in,
beat up
like
by the
fucking
dudes.
Daenerys on her dragon, saving Jon Snow. Yeah, she swooped in, saved his ass.
Except her dragon is the range.
The range, baby.
I mean, fucking Sandy was so funny in this episode. And then, you know, Ryan has went through a lot in this episode. So Mitchell, here, I was having trouble.
Yeah.
Trying to decide. But I thought, what about this? Hear me out. This is unprecedented. We've never done this before in the 10 episodes we've done prior to this one.
Whoa.
Can we give the OC MVP to not a character? Because it's hard to decide which character is best because they all were written pretty well in this episode. They all had their strengths. They all had their weaknesses. If you go back to that scene where they're all yelling at each other, everything's been like their lives are kind of intertwined in this way. Mm. Do we give the OC MVP to Josh Schwartz for writing a solid episode of an ensemble cast TV show where no one character truly outshines the others?
Now, in the spirit of Thanksgiving.
It's Thanksgiving.
I'll say,
as Caleb said.
It's, come on. It's Thanksgiving. It's Thanksgiving. I love that as like, it's such a like a weak excuse for like, for like dismissing shitty behavior. Just be like, come on, it's Christmas. Come on, it's Thanksgiving. Like,
come on, it's a holiday we made up.
Yeah, it's a okay. bullshit holiday. Like, let's let bygones be bygones. I'm just like, is today like the purge? Like, I can get away with anything and you'll just be like, come on, it's Thanksgiving. I'm okay. I don't want to make this a regular thing, but I think Josh Schwartz definitely deserves some recognition for building this world, fleshing out these characters so well. And like the scene in the kitchen where they're just rapid fire ripping on each other, just like creating good, tight drama and like fun kind of comical scenes as well.
It felt really balanced too. It wasn't like, oh, this was a very like Marissa heavy episode, or this wasn't a very heavy like Sandy and Kirsten. Like,
everybody got kind of
back
fair
and
play.
Forth between Chino and Newport. When they're in Newport, they're going between, you know, Seth and Jimmy and Kirsten and like.
Yeah,
I thought it was balanced really well.
It was okay. Yeah, let's give it to Schwartzy.
And to the best of my knowledge, I don't think he won a single Emmy for this show, and I think he deserves some kind of trophy.
Travesty.
right.
Cool.
So Josh Schwartz, congratulations. You are the episode 11 OC MVP. Don't expect any more of these. This was just kind of a thing because you wrote a great episode, and it was hard to decide which character was the best.
It's like a Lifetime Achievement Award or something. Yeah. It's like how, you know, like the last Lord of the Rings movie was not the best one, but they went ahead and gave Peter Jackson all the Oscars because they were like, hey,
all
man,
of them.
You fucking did that. You made all three of those movies like at the same time. Like, good on you, man. Like, here's some Oscars.
They did not do the same when the third Hobbit movie came out.
No, no. At that point, it was just kind of a cash grab.
Fair enough.
Cool. Well, that does it for episode 11, The Homecoming. Thanks for listening, guys. If you want to be so kind as to leave us a review on whatever platform you're listening, it would help us out a lot. We appreciate it. Or don't, like, live your life. It's fine. We can be contacted at jmitchellstheocpodcast@gmail.com. We're in a band called Marcus. We're on Instagram, @we_r_Marcus. We haven't really been doing much because we're not allowed to hang out with each other and play music together. But we got an album on Spotify if you want to listen to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, until next week, we will... See you later. Bye, guys. Love you.
Bye.
This podcast is a Kitty Wing production.